out from an open door across the way. "That's me." Getting to her feet, she put her purse up on her shoulder and headed over. "Right here." Jesus. Talk about nausea. At the prospect of going in to actually meet the doctor, she thought, okay, now she really was going to throw up again. The nurse smiled and stepped back, motioning to a little triage room behind her. "I'm just going to get your weight and blood pressure in here." "Can you hold this?" she asked I.M., holding out her coach bag. "Yep." As he took her purse, the nurse paused and pulled a head-to-toe on the shadow. Then she flushed brilliant red and had to clear her throat. "Welcome," she said to him. I.M. just nodded and kept scanning the back area, like maybe a matched set of ninjas was going to jump out of an exam room or something. Beth had to smile as the nurse refocused and got into the business of taking vitals. After that was done, the woman escorted them down a hallway that had a dozen or so numbered rooms opening off of it. As they went along, the decor was the same brown and cream of the waiting room, with similar kinds of glass-mounted, fake-textured art, doing its best to give a non-institutional feel to a place filled with medical equipment and people in scrubs and white coats. "In 5, please," the nurse said, once again standing to the side. As I.M. passed by her, she took an extra step back, her eyes widening as if she liked the way he smelled. The nurse shook herself and came in, closing the door. "If you could sit on the exam table, that would be great. And you can be anywhere you'd like, sir." The shadow chose the seat right across from the entry, staring at the door as if he were daring somebody, anybody, to come through it. With another smile, Beth had to wonder what the nurse would think if she knew he was prepared to jump anyone he didn't like the looks of, and kill them. Maybe cut them up and put them into a stew. God, she hoped it really had been chicken in that soup. "Miss Marklon? Hello?" She shook herself. "Oh, sorry. What?" The history part of things went fast, because before her transition she had been perfectly healthy, and it wasn't like she was going to tell them that a mere 2 years ago she'd become a vampire. Duh. "And how far along do you think you are?" came the eventual question. "I have no idea whether I'm even pregnant, to be honest. It's a possibility, though, and I'm having a lot of nausea. I just want some reassurance everything's okay." "Have you ever taken an over-the-counter test?" "No. Should I have?" The nurse shook her head. "We can do a blood test right here if the doctor wants one. And as for the nausea, if you are pregnant, a lot of women get morning sickness that's more like all-day sickness in the first trimester. And yet it's all perfectly fine." "Good Lord, I can't believe I'm talking like this." The nurse just smiled and finished writing in the chart. "Okay, now, if you'd like to change into this gown..." A paper square was placed in her lap. "I'll send the doctor in." "Thanks." The door shut behind the nurse with a click. "I can't leave you," I.M. said as he got up, turned around and faced the wall, and put his head in his big hands. "But I would strongly suggest that you do not tell your husband you got naked with me in the room. I like my arms and legs just where they are, thank you very much." "I agree." As she made quick work of getting out of her clothes and into that flimsy gown, she really wanted Rath with her. And actually, it was a good lesson for how much his presence calmed her out. They were so rarely apart, it was easy to forget what he meant to her, especially when things got stressful. And then it was a case of hurry up and wait. "So, if you were going to get married, what kind of woman do you want?" I.M. glanced over at her. "Can't we talk about baseball or something?" "Oh, crap. Or guy, as the case may be. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you." He laughed again. "I'm not gay." "So, what would she be like?" "Man, you don't quit, do you?" Now it was her turn to laugh. "Listen, I'm sitting here freezing cold in this paper doily, about to be told that I have the flu and shouldn't have bothered coming in. Do me a solid and get my mind off my reality, will you? I am sat back in his chair. Well, like I said, I haven't really given it a lot of thought. Can I set you up with someone? No, he barked. No. No, no, no. Back right off the edge of that ledge, girlie. She put out her hands. Okay, okay, just, I don't know, you seem like a good guy. He didn't respond to that one. And as he fell silent, she figured, damn it, she had made him feel awkward. Can I tell you something nobody knows? He blurted. Beth sat up straighter. Yes, please. The shadow let out a long exhale. The truth is, oh God, please don't let the doctor come in before he... I've never been with a female before. As Beth's brows punched up to the center of her forehead, she gave them a strict lecture about resettling. She didn't want him to look up and see the shock on her face. Well, that's... lame, I know. No, no, not at all. Trez has been more than making up for it, he muttered. If we averaged his sex life and mine, we'd still be on the Wilt Chamberlain curve. Oh, wow. I mean, before my brother bolted from the Sahisbi, I was too goddamn shy. And then once the shit hit the fan with him, I've been trying to keep him from spiraling completely out of control. Plus, I don't know, I'm not into the sluts. Our tradition says you honor your body by sharing it only with someone you're halved with. Guess I can't get that bullshit out of my head. After a moment, he glowered across at her. What? I've never heard you say that many words at once. It's nice to have you open up. Can we keep this between us? Yes, absolutely. She waited a couple of beats. But if I meet someone, like, you know, who might make sense, can I introduce you to? He shook his head. Appreciate it. I'm not a good bet, though. So what are you going to do? Live your whole life alone? I have my brother, he said gruffly. Trust me, that shit is more than enough to keep me busy. Yeah, I'm sure it is. When he got quiet again, she assumed he was done talking. Instead, he spoke up one last time. I only have one other secret. What's that? Don't tell anyone. But I like that goddamn cat of yours. Tilting her head to the side, Beth smiled at the shadow. I have a feeling he's pretty fond of you, too. It was a full hour before the door opened again. And it was only another nurse. Hi, I'm Julie. Dr. Sam's tied up in an emergency. She's really sorry. She asked me to take a blood sample to speed things along. For a split second, Beth worried about that bright idea. There were anatomical differences in the two species. What if they found something? Miss Marklon? I.M. had said he was going to take care of any fallout, though, she reminded herself. And she could guess how he was going to do that. Yes, of course. Which arm do you want? Let me take a look at your veins. 5 minutes, one alcohol pad, two sticks, and three filled vials later, she and I.M. were alone again. For a while. Does it always take this long? He asked. With humans? I don't know. I was never sick, and I sure as hell never wondered if I was pregnant before. The shadow rearranged himself in his chair again. You want to call Rath? She took out her phone. I'm not getting a signal. How about you? He checked his phone. Nope. Made sense. They were in one of St. Francis Hospital's newer buildings, a 12 or 15 story high steel and glass number, and they were only on the second floor, in the middle. Not a window in sight. Dot. She wished Rath were here. The door swung open, and later, Much later, she would recall the first thing that struck her. I like this woman. Dr. Sam was 5 feet tall, 50 years old, and all about her patient. Hi, I'm Sam, and I'm sorry you've had to wait. Shifting the folder she was carrying to her opposite arm, she put her hand out and smiled, flashing pretty white teeth and a face that had aged well naturally. Her short blonde hair was a good dye job, and she had some nice gold bangles and a diamond ring on her left hand. You must be Beth. Manny's an old friend of mine. I used to do OBGYN consults for him in the ER from time to time. For absolutely no good reason, Beth felt an absurd urge to cry, and tamped it right down. I'm Beth, Marklon. And you are? She said to IM, also offering her hand. A friend. My husband can't be here, Beth said as those two shook. Oh, I'm sorry. He's not going to be able to be at the appointments. Dr. Sam propped a hip on the exam table. Is he in the military? She glanced at IM. Actually, yes. Thank him for his service for me, will you? God, she hated lying. I will. Okay, so let's get down to business. She opened the folder. Have you been taking prenatal vitamins? No. That's going to be first on our list. Dr. Sam glanced up. I've got some good organic ones that won't make you sick. Wait, so am I pregnant? The doctor frowned. I'm sorry, I thought this was your ultrasound checkup. No, I came in to find out whether I have a stomach flu or if I'm, you know. The doctor pulled the chair the nurse had sat in up really close. Then she put her hand over Beth's. You're very definitely pregnant. And you have been for a while. That's why we need to get you on those prenatals right away, as well as try to put some weight on you. Beth felt the blood drain out of her head. That's not possible. Going by your HCG results, I'd say you're into your second trimester. Although, of course, levels vary significantly. But right now you're over 100,000, so as I said, I'm hoping you'll let me do an ultrasound so we can see what's going on. Yeah, she'd like that, IM said remotely. Can you do it now? Yep, right now. Dr. Sam didn't move, though. But let's make sure Beth's on board. Would you like some time with your friend? I can't be 4 months. You don't understand. It's not possible. Maybe this was a vampire thing, she thought. Like, the reading was wonky because she was a... Well, again, HCG levels are really only an indication in the very beginning, and solely in relation to how much they're increasing. The doctor stood up and opened a drawer, taking out a little boxy device that had a sensor attached to it by a thick wire. May I check for heartbeat? It's not possible. Beth heard herself say. It's just not. Will you let me see if there's a heartbeat? Beth collapsed back onto the table and felt the doctor put something the size of a thumbprint on her stomach. A tiny little rhythm sounded out. Yep, we have a heartbeat. Nice and strong. 140 is what we like to see, and you've got it down pat. Beth could only blink at the ceiling tiles far above her. Get the ultrasound machine, she said roughly. Now. Chapter 64. As John paced around the foyer's mosaic floor, he was acutely aware of two things. One, his sister had been gone for hours. And two, wrath was at the end of his rope. The king had taken up res on the final step of the grand staircase, his torso moving back and forth like the passing of seconds was being measured by his whole body. For no good reason, John went over to the plastic draping over the archway into the billiards room. Work had progressed the night before. In spite of the size of the square footage, the floor was almost entirely up. Tonight, They were supposed to bring in a load of the new marble and start laying the stuff. Then they were going to have to work on the walls, which was going to probably take longer. Wow. He was actually trying to distract himself. Letting the sheeting fall back into place, he glanced over at Rath. You'd think that at a time like this, John would be the worst person to sit with the guy, what with him being mute and the king being blind. But Rath didn't want to communicate, so hey, it worked. Everybody else had fled the scene after Beth had left with the shadow, and John had meant to follow suit. Husband totally trumped brother, especially when it came to shit like this. But once upstairs, even after he'd had a sesh with Zex, his footfalls had taken him back down here, and so he waited. It was funny. He had the sense that if he'd been anyone else, Rath would have thrown him out. "Has your phone gone off?" Rath demanded without looking up. John blew a short, descending whistle, the closest he could come to a no. Then again, if he had gotten a call, they both would have heard the phone. "Text?" John shook his head, before remembering he had to whistle again. Out of nowhere, the vestibule's bell went off. An image appearing on the discreetly mounted monitor by the grand entrance's acres of molding. "Beth, I am, outside on the front steps." As Rath jumped to his feet, John rushed for the access button before Fritz came, whistling in an urgent ascending call so that the husband knew the wife had returned. The second he hit the unlock, the vestibule's inner door swung wide. John would never forget what Beth looked like as she careened into the house. Her face was pale and drawn, her eyes too wide, her movements sloppy and disordered. She was carrying her coat instead of wearing it, and she let the thing, as well as her purse, fall unheeded to the floor. Such pedestrian objects went scattering everywhere. A wallet, a hairbrush, a chapstick. Why was he noticing this? And then all he could see was his sister racing across the mosaic depiction of the apple tree in full bloom, as if she were being chased by a madman. As she jumped at Rath, it was not in joy. She was terrified. In response, Rath held her effortlessly, lifting her off the floor, the strain gritting his jaw having nothing to do with how much she weighed. "What is it, Leland?" he asked.
"I'm pregnant. I'm..."
"Oh, God! Having a boy!" John threw a hand out to steady himself. He couldn't have heard that right. There was no way. Rath slowly let her back down to the floor, and then he took a little T.O., falling onto that lowest step like his knees had given out on him. And gee, what do you know? John did the same. A curious combination of despair and disbelieving joy, taking the starch right out of him until he found himself sitting on the floor. How was this possible? In the silence that followed Beth's big announcement, Rath couldn't get his brain to work, or his arms or legs. As he fell down onto that step, his ass had been warming, he felt like he was in some kind of nightmare. "I don't understand. A son? They were having a son? Your kneading was a night ago. Two at the most."
"I know. I know,"
she choked out. Instantly, he snapped into action. Fuck his own scrambled brain. His Shellen needed him. Taking control of himself, he regathered her into his lap, aware that John and Iam were the only ones around, and he was glad of it. "Tell me what the doctor said." The scent of her tears killed him, but he kept tight as she cleared her throat a couple of times.
"I was just going there to be told it was too early. I wasn't supposed to be 4 months along."
"What?"
"That's what she said."
Beth shook her head against his chest.
"I mean, I know I felt weird, but I thought it was just because the kneading was coming. Instead, I was already... I mean, I guess I got pregnant before it even hit me."
"Jesus Christ." She inched back.
"Honestly, I noticed my clothes were getting tight about a month ago. Maybe a little longer. I thought it was stress eating or because I wasn't making time for exercise. And then my mood started getting wonky. And now that I look back on it, my breasts were sore too. But I never got a period or anything. So I just don't know. Oh, God, what if I harmed the baby by being with Layla? What if...
Beth, shh. Beth, listen to me. What did the doctor say about the young?
She said...
His mate sniffled.
She said he was beautiful. He's perfect. He's got the heart of a lion.
At this, Beth collapsed in a fit of sobs, the kind of thing that was a release of emotion more than anything else. And as he held her, he stared out over her head.
A son, he said roughly. The doctor says he's big and strong, and I saw him move, she said through tears. I didn't know it was a baby. I thought it was indigestion.
So you were pregnant before the kneading?
That's the only explanation I have, she wailed.
Wrath held her even closer, right to his beating chest.
A son? Yes, a son.
All of a sudden, he felt the biggest, widest, happiest grin hit his face, the goddamn thing stretching his cheeks until they hurt, making his eyes water from the strain, pulling at his temples until they burned. And the joy wasn't just on his puss. A flush so great it burned him alive flooded through his body, cleansing him in places he didn't know were dirty, washing out cobwebs that had crept into his corners, making him feel alive in a way he hadn't been in a very, very long time. Before he knew what he was doing, he burst to his feet with Beth in his arms, leaned back, and hollered at the top of his lungs, with more pride than his 6'9" frame could hold. A son! I'm having a son! Chapter 65. Beth fell in love with her son at that moment. As Wrath howled at the moon with fatherly pride, she smiled through her tears and worry. It had been so long since she'd seen him well and truly happy, and yet here he was, in the midst of news she'd expected him to freak out about, shining like the sun. And their son was the cause of it. "Where the hell is everybody?" he bitched as he glared up the stairs. "You just called them about 2 seconds ago." People came at a dead run, a traffic jam forming at the top of the stairs, in spite of the fact that the thing was huge. The sound of big feet thundering down to the foyer as the brothers came with their mates in tow.
"Here," she said, taking out a flimsy slip of paper. "Show them this. It's a picture from the ultrasound."
Wrath shifted her around so he was holding her with one arm, and he took that pic and thrust it out like it was billboard size and made of gold.
"Look," he barked. "Look, my son, my son."
Beth had to laugh, even as her tears ran harder.
"Look!"
His brothers formed a circle around what he was holding out, and she was astonished. Every one of them had a sheen across their eyes, their manly, tight smiles proof they were holding their emotions in check. And then she looked at Tor. He was hanging back, with Autumn close to his side. As his mate glanced up in concern, he seemed to brace himself to come forward.
"I'm so happy for you," the brother said roughly to both of them. "Oh, Tor," she blurted, reaching out her hands.
As the brother clasped them, Wrath dropped his arm as if hiding the picture.
"No," Tor cut in. "You keep that up. You feel that pride. I have a good feeling about this, and I'm rejoicing with you, all the way."
"Ah, fuck," Wrath said, yanking the brother in for a hard embrace.
"Thanks, my man."
There were so many voices, and people congratulating them, but there was one other face she wanted to see. John was also staying on the periphery, but as he caught her eye, he started to smile, although it wasn't like Wrath's. He was worried.
"I'm going to be fine," she mouthed.
even though she wasn't sure she believed that. She blamed herself for not knowing she was pregnant, for trying to get that needing of hers started falsely, and especially for succeeding. What if that violent nausea had been a miscarriage in the making? What if... Pulling herself back from the brink, she held on to two things. One, she'd heard that heartbeat, nice and strong. And two, the doctor had raved about the baby. Abruptly, the sea of people parted, and then there they were. Bella, with Nala in her arms, Zee standing beside his girls. Beth broke down all over again as the female came forward. God, it was impossible not to remember how Nala had started this, putting into motion the need that had become undeniable. Bella was tearing up too as she stopped. We just want to say, yay. At that moment, Nala reached out to Beth, a gummy smile on her face, pure joy radiating out. No turning that down. Nope, not at all. Beth took the little girl out of her mother's arms and positioned her on her chest, capturing one of the pinwheeling hands and giving kisses, kisses, kisses. You ready to be a big... Beth glanced at Zee and then her husband. A big sister? Yes, Beth thought, because that's what the Brotherhood and their families were. Close as siblings, tighter than blood because they were chosen. Yes, she is, Bella said as she wiped under her eyes and looked back at Zee. She is so ready. My brother. Zee shoved out his palm, his scarred face in a half-smile, his yellow eyes warm. Congratulations. Instead of shaking anything, Wrath shoved that ultrasound picture into his brother's face. You see him? See my son? He's big, right, Beth? She kissed Nala's super-soft hair. Yes. Big and healthy, right? Beth laughed some more. Big and healthy. Absolutely perfect. Perfect! Wrath bellowed. And this is a doctor saying it. I mean, she went to medical school. Even Zee started laughing at that point. Beth gave Nala back to her parents. And Dr. Sam told me she's delivered over 15,000 babies over the course of her career. See? Wrath yelled. She knows these things. My son is perfect. Where's the champagne? Fritz, get the fucking champagne! Shaking her head, Beth took a deep breath and decided to go with the moment. There was still a long hall in front of them, capped off with the delivery, which, Christ, was scaring the shit out of her already. With so many hurdles ahead and so many unknowns, it was tempting to get lost in a tailspin. But for the next hour, she just wanted to live with Wrath in all this high-octane joy, be a part of the celebration of this miracle. So damn funny. All the while they had been fighting about children, they'd already had one cooking. Life was really ironic sometimes. Lounging back in her husband's arms, she just enjoyed watching him as he clapped his brothers on the back and even accepted a flute of Kristall from Fritz. Her Helrin was a tall guy, but right now, he put Mount Everest to shame. You can put me down, she said with a smile. The frown that got shot her way was a brick wall if she'd ever seen one. Absolutely not. You're my wife, and you're carrying my child. You'll be lucky if I let your feet touch the floor 3 years from now. With that, he bent in and kissed her on the mouth. Ah, hell. Maybe she should have been all, this baby is a we thing, not a you thing. But that wasn't how she felt. She had been so terrified he wouldn't accept and love a child. She was relieved and overjoyed that he was getting possessive already. Falling in love already, which was the best news for their unborn child. When Wrath, son of Wrath, decided someone was his, he would drag the moon down to Earth if they needed it. The reaction was exactly what she had been too scared to wish for. Wrath lifted his glass. To my son! he shouted over the crowd. And more importantly, to my wife. As he turned his face to her, the love he felt made his eyes glow so fiercely, she could see the pale green light even through the wraparounds. The household shouted in joy, and everyone drank. Except her, of course. Because she was pregnant, she thought with a bright smile to rival Rath's. Rath rode the wave for as long as it took him. With his brothers surrounding him, and a new purpose jacking his shit up, he knew that this was one of the best nights of his life. Or, shit, it was still day, wasn't it? Who the fuck cared, really? It was difficult to explain, even to himself, what exactly had changed. But suddenly, everything felt different. From the way he shook his brothers' hands, to how he smiled at their mates, to the hold he kept on Beth. And she was the best part of everything. With champagne flowing and the laughter echoing around the foyer, he couldn't believe he had reached this moment in his life. Just a night before, he had been throneless and potentially mateless, and here he was with the crown still on his head and his wife pregnant with his young. 4 months along. He thought back, sifting through the weeks and then the months. There had been a night, about 4 months ago, when Beth had come to find him in the study during the day. They hadn't been together for a while at that point, what with everything going on, and he'd been shocked, in a good way, by how aggressively she'd gotten on him. Afterward, come to think of it, her scent had changed, deepening, although not in the way of vampire females would with pregnancy. All along, she had been with Young. Destiny had served them both up what she had wanted but feared would never have, and what he didn't know he'd needed. As he heard his mate yawn, he went on instant alert. Okay, time to go up. The crowd calmed down immediately, and he could sense the focus on his Beth. She was going to get a lot of that from now on, not just from him but from his brothers. They were protective of her already. Pregnant? She was going to get that shit 20-fold now. And I think I need to feed again, his Beth said as he started up the stairs, George leading him by subtle pressure on his leg. I got you. He frowned. What did the doc say about the nausea? She really does think I have the flu. But then, she doesn't know about the whole kneading thing, and maybe that's why. I'll talk to Havers. You don't have to go see him. That would be great, actually. I'm really nervous. Don't you worry. I got this. And he absolutely, positively did. He felt in control of the universe, an old, familiar part of him waking up once again. George guided him to the door that opened up to the stairs to the third floor, and when they got to the top, Rath went to the left. As the vault was unlocked, he walked inside, taking her immediately to the bed. You want me to run a bath? A shower? The sink? She laughed. I just want to lie here. I feel like I've been on a roller coaster ride that's been going too fast. Sitting down beside her, he found her lower belly with his hand. I love this. Love what? This bump thing you got going on. He smiled. That's our Young. It sure is. I wish I could see it. That picture. Me too. But this is good. He rubbed in circles, trying to imagine what his son would look like. And he's strong. Yes. Just like his father. Here. Take my vein. He extended his wrist to her mouth. Please. Oh, thank you. As her fangs sank into his skin, he wanted her at his throat but didn't trust himself. He was juiced up, and that kind of shit tended to like a particular outlet, and that was not happening while she was pregnant. Nope. Not with his son in there. His wife's hand landed on his hard cock, and he nearly jumped out of his skin.
Fuck!
She broke the seal on his vein. We can have sex, you know.
No. Nope.
Wrath, I'm not sick, and it's not like we have to worry about whether or not I'm going to be pregnant. The smile on her face was all over her tone. You got that job done just fine.
I did, didn't I?
I am so happy about this, she said, as he felt her touch his face. About your response, most of all. Guess he'd surprised them both with his reaction. Stroking her belly, he thought about what was growing inside of her. You want to know what the best part of this is?
Tell me,
she whispered. You have given me something I didn't even know I needed. It's the greatest gift I will ever receive. It's like completing me already in places I wasn't aware were empty. And yet, in spite of all that, I don't love you one bit more. You are as important to me as you've always been. He curled down and pressed a kiss to the loose shirt she was wearing. It was one of his, actually, and wasn't that great. I was wholly bonded to you before this, and will be after this, and forevermore. You're going to make me cry again. So cry, and let me take care of you. I got this. I love you so much. He moved up to her mouth and kissed her once, twice, three times. Right back at you. Now finish feeding and rest, and I'll have food brought up.
No food, please. Not right now. Your strength is all I need.
Amen to that, he thought. Wrath stayed on the edge of that bed forever as she nursed against his wrist. Then he helped her to shower, got her dried off, and put her between the sheets.
I'm just going to rest a little, she said,
already drifting off as the shutters started to rise for the night. However long you want.
A son. A son.
I'm going to hit the desk, he said, before stopping himself. Funny, that was what he'd told her every night after first meal. Their joking way of acknowledging he was going to go put his crown on and deal with shit.
I'm so glad, she said in a sleepy voice.
Funny, right now, all that king stuff didn't seem like a burden anymore. In fact, as he grabbed onto George's halter, it felt shockingly easy to go down the stairs and head for his study. And as he went into the room, he found the desk, walked around its carved corners, and paused before sitting in his father's chair. It was with a sense of awe that he slowly lowered his weight. The throne creaked as it always did, and he wondered, as his father had sat in it, had it done the same? He didn't remember that detail from his youth and wished his memory was better. Instead of calling for Saxton to come in, or checking email through his voice-activated computer, he frowned and tried to pull as many recollections out of the past as he could. They were hazy, the ones he did recall, because of his faulty eyes. God. He'd never really thought of his wife's human side one way or the other, but he hoped like hell that the new DNA she was bringing to the table went to work on his defect. It would be so great if his son was born with good eyesight. But if the young wasn't, then he himself had blazed the trail, and he would be there to support his son. Being blind wasn't great, but it didn't mean you had to miss out in life. Shit. To think he'd been willing to sacrifice a child just because he was scared he or she might have a defect. Stupid. So stupid. And really fucking lame of him. Thank Christ destiny had known better.
My lord,
Fritz said. Come on in.
Damn,
he was really cheerful. Time to dial that down, if only so he didn't annoy himself.
One of the workmen wishes for an audience.
Ah, yes. And for a moment, He reverted to his default to push things away, but then he got to his feet. "I'll come down." "No." With conscious thought, he sat back in the throne. "Send him up. Escort him, though, will you? And get some brothers to help." He wasn't ready to trust anyone but the people in his household. "Right away," the butler said. "My pleasure." Looked like he wasn't the only one with his happy, happy joy-joy on. He glanced down to the floor. "I don't know what I'm doing here, George." The supportive chuff he got in return was exactly the vote of confidence he needed. Fuck the Glimera for real. A little later, Vicious's sharp voice cut into the room. "I got your visitor, True. Send him in." There was some shuffling, and suddenly, the sense in the room changed. So overwhelmingly, Wrath recoiled. He'd never known such gratitude? Was that what it was? Reverence? It was a bouquet born of deep emotions, that was for sure. "The foreman's bowing before your desk, my brother," V said. "His hat's off." The fact that the foreman was crying was something Vicious judiciously left off the report. Wrath got to his feet and went around. Before he could say anything, though, a stream of words fell from the humble male's mouth. "I know it's you. I know it could only be you." The male's voice choked. "I cannot repay you. How did you know?" Wrath shrugged. "I just figured your daughter probably needed a better wheelchair, and a couple of ramps." "And the van. That van. How did you—" "I'm guessing money's a little tight. Although you take care of your family just fine. And as for the why, you're helping me here. I wanted to help you there."
"My second Shellen, she cannot express her thanks enough. Nor can I. But we offer you this. As an unworthy tribute to your highness."
Wrath frowned, a sudden slice from the past coming back to him. And it made him blink hard. He could remember people doing this with his father, offering the king tokens of thanks. "I am honored," he said gruffly, as he put his hands out. What was laid across his palms was smooth, soft. "What is it?" There was an awkward pause, as if the foreman didn't understand. And that was the moment when Wrath knew he'd come to a crossroads. Oddly, he thought of his son. Shifting the slight weight to one hand, he reached up and removed his wraparounds. "I'm blind," he told the commoner. "I cannot see. That's how I knew what would matter to you and your family. I've got some experience making accommodations in this world." The gasp was loud. Wrath smiled a little. "Yeah, that blind king title isn't just gossip. It's the gods honest, and I'm not ashamed of it." Holy shit. Until he said the words, he hadn't realized how inferior he'd felt. How much he had kept hidden. How many apologies he had offered because of something that he had no control over. But that time was past. Sighted or not, he had an example to set in this world, and he was goddamned if he wasn't going to live up to it. "So please," he told the clearly astonished commoner, "describe to me the gift that you pay me honor with." There was a very long pause, and the foreman wasn't the only one who was surprised. V was emanating 12 kinds of OMG as he smoked like a frickin' chimney over in the corner. The foreman cleared his throat.
"It is, my mate. She weaves fabric in the traditional way from the old country. She sells it within the race for solace banners and clothing. It is her finest weave, one that she did years ago and has not had the heart to sell. It took her a year to complete it."
The male's voice cracked. "She said she knows now why she could not let it go. She says to tell you she knows now. She was saving it in tribute for you." Wrath put the wraparounds aside and ran his hands back and forth over the cloth. "I've never felt anything this fine. It's like satin. What color is it?"
"Red.
My favorite color." Rath paused, and then decided, "Fuck it. I'm having a son." Cue the second gasp. "Yeah. My love and I, we got lucky." Abruptly, the reality of his son not being the heir to the throne hit, and there was a sadness. There truly was, but also a kind of relief. "I will use this to receive him in, when he is born." And that would be a third gasp. "No, he's not the heir to the throne," Rath said. "My wife is part human, so he cannot sit where I do. And that's all right. His son would make his own way. He was free." And as Rath spoke his truth, without apology or explanation, as he cloaked himself in the vestments of honesty, as he said the words he had kept hidden without realizing he had done so, he realized he too was finally free, and that his parents, if they had had a chance to look over his shoulder, would have approved of him. Just the way he was. Chapter 66. The Caldwell Galleria Mall was open until 10 o'clock at night. As Score materialized in a hidden corner of its vast chain of parking lots, he then strode past the lines of parked cars, his long strides eating up the distance to an entrance that had some giant red sign over a multitude of doors. He had no idea what he was doing here, about to walk around humans, with a purpose that, had one of his soldiers put such forth, he would never have let them get over it. Pushing in through the glass portals, he frowned. Female clothes abounded on the left and the right, all manner of cheery colors. That made him think fondly of unleashing a flamethrower to put his retinas out of their misery. Up ahead, there was section after section of glass cases with sparkling oddities in them, scarves hanging from racks, and mirrors. God damn, there were mirrors everywhere. Passing them by, he ducked his eyes. He didn't want the reminder of his ugliness. Especially not this night. Did they even have what he was looking for in this place? Prowling around the first floor, he could feel the eyes of the proper customers on him, and it was clear they were wondering if they were going to end up on the evening news in a bad way. He ignored them all and proceeded upward on a set of moving stairs. It was on the second floor that he found the menswear department. Yes, herein all manner of masculine shirts and pants and sweaters and jackets were arranged on hangers and display tables. And just as with down below, music thumped in low tones overhead, whilst light streamed from the ceiling to set off the merchandise. What the hell was he doing here? "Hey, can I help you?" "Whoa." As he wheeled around and settled into his attack stance, the black human salesperson jumped back and put his palms up. "Forgive me," Score muttered. At least he hadn't outed one of his weapons. "No problem," the handsome, well-dressed man smiled. "You looking for something specific?" Score glanced around and nearly walked back to that fancy stairwell. "I require a new shirt." "Oh, cool. You got a hot date?" "And pants. And socks." Come to think of it, he never wore underwear. "And undergarments. And a jacket." The salesman smiled and raised a hand as if he were going to clap his customer on the shoulder, but then caught himself as he clearly rethought the contact. "What kind of look are you going for?" he asked instead. "Clothed." The guy paused, like he wasn't sure whether that was a joke. Okay. I can work with non-naked. Plus it's legal. Come on with me." Score followed, because he didn't know what else to do. He'd gotten this ball rolling. There was no reason not to follow through.
The man stopped in front of a display of shirts. "So I'm going to go with the it's a date thing unless you tell me otherwise. Casual? You didn't mention a suit."
"Casual, yes. But I want to look, well, not like himself, at any rate. Presentable."
"Then I think what you're going to want is a button-down."
"A button-down."
The guy regarded him steadily. "You're not from here, are you?"
"No, I'm not.
I can tell by the accent."
The salesman passed a hand over the dizzying array of folded-up squares with collars.
"These are our traditional cuts. I can tell without measuring you that the European stuff isn't going to do you right. You're too muscled in the shoulders. Even if we could get the neck and arm size right, you'd bust out of them. Do you like any of these colors?"
"I don't know what to like."
"Here." The man picked up a blue one that reminded Score of the backdrop on his phone. "This is good with your eyes. Not that I go that way, but you gotta work with what you got. Do you have any idea of your size?"
3XL.
"We need to be a little more exact." The salesman got out a cloth tape measure. "Neck? Arms?" As if to help the whole cognition thing, the man made a little circle in front of his own throat. Score looked down at himself. He was wearing nothing but the cleanest muscle shirt he had, a pair of military combat pants, and his boots.
"I do not know."
The man reached out with the tape, but then hesitated. "Tell you what, how about I give this to you? Just wrap it around your neck and I'll read the number." Score took the thing and did as asked.
"Okay. Wow."
The salesman crossed his arms over his chest. "Well, you won't be wearing a tie, right?"
"Tie.
I'll take that as a no. Will you let me measure your arm?" Score extended his left one and the man moved fast. "That's almost normal in length, at least. Width? You're talking the rock territory. Easy. But I have an idea." A minute and a half of rifling later, Score had 3 different shirts to try on. "What about slacks?" the salesman asked.
"I do not know my size or preference."
"Might as well be efficient.
The same is true about jackets."
"I had a feeling you were going to say that. Come with me." Before he knew it, he was buck naked in a dressing room, jacking his body into the clothes, his weapons hidden under the pile of things he'd worn walking in.
"How is it?"
his new best friend asked on the far side of the door. Score glanced at himself in the mirror and felt his brows rise. He looked not good, no. That would never be him. But he didn't appear as stupid as he felt, or as rough as he'd been in his own wardrobe. Taking off the dark jacket that had been suggested to him, he strapped on his guns and knives and then put the thing back on. It was a little tight in the back, and he couldn't quite button it, but it was so much better than his blood-stained leather duster. And the pants stretched across his thighs only slightly. Stepping out, he handed over the 2 other shirts.
"I shall take all this."
The salesman clapped his hands. "Nice. Big improvement. You need shoes?"
"Mayhap later."
"We're having a sale at the end of the month. Come back then." Score followed him over to the checkout, and took a pair of scissors out of a pen holder to cut the tags that were hanging off his wrist and his waist.
"Do you have scent?"
"Oh, you mean cologne?"
"Aye."
"That's another department, across the way. I can show you where they are. Actually, check this." He pulled open a drawer. "I have some samples here." "Yeah, old school Drakkar. Ego East. That's a good one. Polo, the original. Oh, try this." Score accepted a small vial, popped the lid and breathed in. Fresh. Clean. What Handsome would smell like if it had a fragrance. Basically, everything he wasn't.
"I like this one.
Calvin Klein Eternity. Very traditional. And the honeys like it." Score nodded as if he knew what he was talking about. Such a lie.
The salesman rang up everything. Okay, your total's 501.92. Score took out the bills he'd shoved in his back pocket. I have this, he said, fanning the money out in his open palms. The salesman's brows popped. Yeah, it's not that much at all. There was a pause. Do you... Yeah, okay. I need 5 of those, 4 of these, and 2 of the little guys. Score tried to facilitate the process of the man pulling specific denominations out that apparently meant something. And here's your change and receipt. You want a bag for your old stuff? Yes, please. Thank you. A big white bag with a red star was passed over the console. Thanks for coming in. My name's Antoine, by the way, if you want to come back for shoes. After shoving his former clothes inside, Score found himself bowing at the waist. Your assistance has been much appreciated. Antoine raised his palm like he was getting ready to do a clap on the shoulder again. But once more, he caught himself and smiled instead. Knock her dead, my man. Oh, no. Score shook his head. That shan't be necessary. This one I like. Layla left the mansion at 11:48 by sneaking out the library's French doors. No one seemed to notice. Then again, Rage and John Matthew were keeping an eye on the workmen in the billiards room. Wrath was up in his study with Saxton. Beth was at rest. The other brothers were fighting, and Quinn and Blay were enjoying some quiet time on their night-off rotation. Oh, and the staff were busy cleaning up after a celebratory first meal. Not that she was keeping track of everybody in the house. Nah. Dematerializing off the back terrace, she traveled to the meadow she was becoming so familiar with and reformed at the base of the maple tree. Dressed in her traditional robing, she had an overcoat on to keep warm, in the pocket of which she had put some mace. Quinn had insisted on teaching her self-defense as well as how to drive. So in case that other male showed up, she was prepared. Slipping her hand into the coat pocket and palming the squat cylinder, she was careful to walk all the way around the tree, and note carefully the expanse of snow-covered meadow. She was alone. Dearest virgin scribe, was she really? Down at the base of the rise, a figure presented itself out of thin air, and as the breeze shifted directions, she caught the scent. It was him. And something else. Some kind of fragrance that was at once masculine and delicious. Score took a long time to approach, his strides even and unhurried as he mounted the hill and came up to her, carrying something under his arm. Her body responded instantly to his presence, her heart racing, her palms sweating, her breath going short. She told herself it was fear, and overwhelmingly that was true. But there was something else. His clothes were different, she realized as he arrived before her, more refined, attractive. As if, mayhap, he had dressed for her? Trying to relieve the burning in her lungs, she inhaled deeply and frowned. You smell different. Bad? She shook her head. No, not at all. And your clothes? You look very well. He made no response, and his face gave nothing away, so she could not draw any conclusion. Silence stretched out, until she couldn't stand it anymore. Well? At least he didn't pretend to misread her prompting. I have thought over everything that you have offered me. And now her heart beat so loud, she could barely hear his deep voice. What say you? She demanded in a hoarse voice. I agree to your terms. It was what she had expected. And yet even still, she began to shake uncontrollably. In exchange for the use of you, I shall call off all of my efforts with regard to the throne. At least there was solace to be had in that. except then she knew she had to live up to her end of the bargain.
"Worry not," he said gruffly. "It shall not be this eve."
Her relief came out in a very loud exhale that made his face darken.
"Your reprieve is not indefinite." He took what he carried out from under his arm. "You will give me what I want, sooner or later."
With a quick flap, he shook free what proved to be a blanket and laid it flat upon the ground. Staring down at it, Layla didn't know what to do.
"Sit," he commanded, "and put this around you."
As she complied and was handed another wrap, she wondered what he was going to... Skor sat beside her and wrapped his arms around his knees. Staring ahead, his expression was inscrutable. Taking his cue, she did the same, even mirroring his pose. At least she had saved Wrath, and provided her young was safe, she would continue to do whatever she had to for her king, no matter what it cost.
Chapter 67. The following evening, Beth lay back in her mated bed and held an extraordinary piece of cloth in her hands.
This was made by someone?
Yeah, the foreman's Shellen. Squinting, she tried to imagine how the incredibly fine and even weave could have been done by anything other than a machine.
It's totally amazing.
I told them we'd use it for our son when he's born.
With a wince, she tried to ignore the spear of pure terror that shot through her. Wrath, who'd been panicked about the whole birthing thing before they'd conceived, seemed to be forgetting about that part for the moment. Her, on the other hand, more than making up the slack.
"Yes, of course," she murmured. "I love the color."
"I just had to do something for the two of them. He's a good guy. I didn't expect anything in return."
As Wrath walked out of the closet, he was dressed in his uniform, and she had to take a second to admire the view. His hair was swinging loose, almost to his tight ass. His magnificent arms were showing every muscle they had, thanks to the wife-beater, and those leather pants.
"So I guess she'd worked on that for a year.
Are you ever going to have sex with me again, or do I have to wait 5 months?"
Stopped. Dead.
But at least she knew her husband was paying attention.
"Come on, Wrath. Like I said yesterday, I'm pregnant, not broken."
"Ah."
She stared at his hips, watching his arousal take shape, wanting that long, hard erection of his.
"Well, at least I know you want me," she murmured.
"Don't ever doubt that."
"So how about now? Because you look very fine."
Her eyes did another up and down.
"Did you get bigger all of a sudden? I mean, is that a baseball bat in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me? Come over here and let me sample your goods, big guy."
He let his head fall back.
"Beth."
"What? What's the problem? Look, we gotta talk about this. This abstinence thing is not good for you and me.
My son's in there, okay? And it doesn't seem right."
Beth didn't mean to laugh, but she couldn't stop herself.
"I'm sorry."
She put her hands up as he frowned like he was pissed.
"Honestly, I'm not making fun of you."
"Oh, really?
Come here."
She held her arms out.
"And no, I'm not going to seduce you. Scout's honor."
He walked over in his bare feet, his black socks hanging from his deft hands. It seemed ludicrous to sit the king of the vampires down and give him a pep talk, especially when he was built the way he was. But she was going to go nuts if she couldn't have that sexual connection, and so was he.
"I'd like to be with you," she said,
"but only if you're comfortable with it. It's not going to hurt the baby. You can call the doctor and ask her yourself. Or talk to Zee. He and Bella were together while she was pregnant. She told me so.
Talk to whoever you need to, but please rethink where you're at. Being with you has to have a place in all this.
As he cracked his knuckles, like he was considering things, she stared at the tattoos that ran up his inner forearms. She tried to imagine a son of hers with a set of those and reached out, turning one of his hands over so she could run her fingertips across the symbols.
Will he get these too?
So many names, she thought. Or because I'm his mother, is he not allowed? Fuck that shit. He can abso get them, and I'll have V do it, but only if he wants them.
I'm surprised.
About?
How much I want him to. I want him to be just like you.
There was a long pause, and Rath had to clear his throat. That's just about the best compliment anyone's ever paid me.
I don't know. I just feel like you're the perfect man.
Now you're making me blush. She laughed in a rush.
It's true.
I curse. Constantly. I have a short temper. I order people around. Including you.
You're also a great fighter. Great lover.
Although my son will never, ever have sex.
Nope. Not going there.
And if we have grandchildren, they will be immaculately conceived.
Wait, where was I?
Oh, yeah. So you're also very loyal? You've never looked at another woman?
Rath put his index finger up.
And that would be true even if I could see.
And you're smart.
Great looking.
He leaned in.
Are you trying to butter me up so I'll have sex with you?
Is it working?
Maybe. He kissed her lips, softly. Just give me a little time. Only yesterday you were rushed to the docks because you were throwing up.
She ran her hand down his cheek and his hard jaw.
I'll wait for you. Always.
I'm glad.
He sat back.
So, how is the stomach? You want food?
The doctor said we need to put some weight on you, right?
Nothing appeals. But I will try some of those saltines and ginger ale in a bit. Layla swore by them.
Good deal. When do you go back to the dock again?
Well, that was the other part of the appointment. Iam had to work a little magic on the poor woman. Naturally, my blood work was nothing they'd ever seen before, although the pregnancy hormone numbers turned out to be right enough. She wanted me back in a month, unless anything changes.
Doc Jane said she was going to try to get an ultrasound machine for the clinic. They have some portable equipment for ortho stuff, but there isn't one specifically for pregnancy that does 3D imaging.
Unfortunately, that stuff's going to be hella expensive.
Whatever they need, they get.
Beth nodded and fell into silence.
After a moment, she picked up her husband's big hand and rubbed her thumb up and over that black diamond of his.
What are you going to do tonight?
Even though she knew the answer.
I'm going to hit my desk.
She smiled. I love when you say that now.
You know, me too.
He shrugged.
It's funny. I felt really inadequate in that job.
You know, when compared to my father, blah, blah, blah. But I was the one who didn't approve of me. Not him. And I don't know. I've kind of let that bullshit go.
I'm glad.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
He frowned.
I just wish there was some way to... I don't know. I liked helping that foreman. And there are more like him out there. There have to be. I don't know how to get to them, though. My father used to be all in with that shit. Talking to people. Real people. Not that Glymyra bullshit.
Beth sat up in a rush.
I have an idea. I know exactly what to do.
He glanced over at her, and the slow smile that hit his face was the sexiest thing about him.
You know what? He said. I love your mind. I totally do.
Rath swung his leg out and around, bringing it in a full circle, and contact was made exactly where he wanted it. High up, and in the face.
Torture went with the impact, swinging in a circle, wielding his sword in concert so that the blade flashed right up close to Wrath's chest. Except it didn't quite make the distance. No blood was drawn, no clothing cut. But Wrath knew better than to enjoy the small victory. Flipping backward off his feet, he somersaulted in mid-air and landed solidly, setting his fighting stance, raising both his daggers. "Drop both blades!" Agony barked. Without missing a beat, he threw them away, confronting his opponent barehanded. Torture came at him holding nothing back, neither speed nor strength, and Wrath became very still. At the last second, as the brother's war cry was sounded out and echoed in the torch-lit cave, Wrath flattened to the ground and caught the fighter at the ankles with an explosive lunge. Torture fell forward, and as Wrath had learned, the last thing you wanted was a brother with a sword in his hands on top of you. Scrambling himself out of the way, he jumped back to his feet. This was critical. Always back to your feet. Torture was the same. Upright a moment later, sword held high, eyes level. Both of them were breathing hard, and now, after how many fortnights into training, Wrath wasn't the only one with bruises. The sword made a throaty whistle as Torture began to twirl it front to back on both sides of his massive upper body. Wrath wasn't even aware of the assessments he was making, where the weight of his opponent was apportioned, where those eyes were looking, how the small muscle groups were contracting. But it was all part of his training, things that had once seemed foreign and were becoming second nature. From out of nowhere, he was attacked from the back, an enormous weight taking him down to the floor. Before he could draw air, he was flipped over and held by the throat as a spiked glove made a fist. Crack! The impact stunned him senseless, his arms flopping to the packed dirt floor. "Call!" Agony yelled out. Instantly, the weight was off him, Knight jumping back out of the way, his face showing concern the now, not aggression. Wrath forced himself to roll over and brace his upper body off the ground. Struggling to breathe through his bleeding mouth, he let the sanguinary rush clear out onto the dirt flooring with gravity's aid. The pain had flared red-hot in his face, and as he waited for it to fade, he remembered back in the beginning of all this. How the sensation of injury had once flustered him, scared him, distracted him. No more of that. Now he knew the pattern of relief, how the numbness would inevitably come, how soon enough his mind would clear and he would be back on his feet. Drop, drop, drop. His blood was bright red as it formed a widening puddle under his face. "That's enough for tonight," Agony announced. "Fine effort, sire." Wrath pushed himself up upon his knees so his torso was upright. He knew better than to attempt to stand yet. His skull was too light for that. "Wait, wait." "Here, sire, allow me," Knight said, offering his palm. "Shall we call for the healer?" someone said. Wrath closed his eyes and felt his body caving in. But then he pictured his beloved Shellen, lying on their bedding platform, her skin the color of clouds. Standing on his own, he spit the remaining blood out of his mouth. "Again," he told the assembled. "We do it again." There was a beat of pause, the torchlight flickering over the other males in the secret training cave. And then the brothers bowed unto him in a way he had noticed they had recently started doing. Not courtly, no, as it was not when greeting and leaving, as was aristocratic custom. This was with respect. "As you wish, my lord," Agony said, before shouting once again, "Call!" Chapter 68.
Whither goest thou?
Abalone paused in the process of pulling on his coat. Closing his eyes, he composed his expression before he turned around and faced his daughter. "Nowhere, my darling," he smiled.
Are you proceeding about your lessons?
Why this letter?
She tapped the open envelope in her palm.
Where are you going?
He thought of the proclamation that hung above the fireplace, the one that bore his father's name, and then worried over what she held in her delicate hand.
I was summoned unto the king,
he said tightly.
I must obey.
His daughter paled, crossing her arms around herself.
Are you coming back?
I do not know. Walking over, he reached out and pulled her close. That is up to His Majesty.
Do not go.
You shall be provided for. Assuming the assets once given to his father by the current king's sire remained hers. But even then, he had hidden much in secret places. Federica knows all and shall care for you. He stepped back. I cannot shame our bloodline. Your future depends upon this. If he did not make good on his cowardly action, he knew she could be next, and that he would not abide.
Be well,
he told her in a shaken voice.
Father!
She screamed as he turned and headed to the door. Nodding at the butler, he couldn't watch as the Doggan stepped in and held his daughter back. Outside, he could still hear his beloved young yelling his name and wailing, and it was a while before he was able to summon the concentration to dematerialize, although eventually it happened. Proceeding unto the address that had been given to him, he reformed in front of... Well, if this was where he was to be executed, it was an elegant enough place to lose one's life. The mansion was in the very best part of Caldwell. A federal beauty with light glowing out of all of its windows, and a cheerful lantern hanging in front of a beckoning entrance. He could see figures moving inside. Large ones. With fear tightening his throat and weakening his knees, he walked up to the front door. There was a button for chiming by the brass door handle, and as soon as he hit it, the broad portal was opened wide.
Hi, you must be Abalone.
All he could do was blink. The brunette in front of him was wearing loose clothes, her hair curling at the ends, her bright blue eyes friendly and attentive.
I'm Beth. She stuck her hand out. I'm really happy you came.
He looked down at her hand and frowned. Was that the saturnine ruby on her finger?
Dearest virgin scribe, this was the...
Abalone fell to his knees before her, bowing his head nearly to the polished floor.
Your Highness, I am not worthy of...
Two massive black boots came into his vision. Hey, my man, thanks for coming.
This had to be a dream.
Abalone lifted his eyes up, up, way up. The most tremendous male vampire he had e'er beheld, and indeed... With that long black hair and those wraparound sunglasses, he knew exactly who it was.
Your Highness, I...
No offense, but could you get up? I'd like to shut this door. My wife is getting cold. Scrambling off the floor, he realized he'd forgotten to remove his hat. With a jerky move, he ripped it from his head and put it in front of his body. And then all he could do was look back and forth. And then behind, as two males, so huge that they had to be brothers, moved chairs across the foyer.
Is this him?
The splendidly handsome one asked.
Yep,
the king replied, sweeping his arm to the right.
Let's go in here, Abe.
Are you going to kill me?
Abalone blurted without moving. The queen's brows popped.
No, good God, no. Why would we do that?
Rath put a hand on Abalone's shoulder. I need you alive, buddy. I need your help. Convinced he was going to wake up at any moment, Abalone followed numbly into a lovely room that must have been for dining purposes, given its crystal chandelier and prominent fireplace. There was no long, thin table, however, no row of chairs, no sideboard for serving. Instead, in front of the hearth, a pair of armchairs had been angled to face each other,
and there were other comfortable sofas and seats set off to the side. A desk had been arranged in the near corner, at which there was a handsome blonde male in a natty three-piece suit, shuffling papers around.
"Have a seat, Abe," the king said as he himself took one of the armchairs.
Abalone obliged. 'Twas far better than a guillotine, after all. The king smiled, his harsh, aristocratic face warming some.
"I don't know how much you know about my father, but he used to do audiences with commoners. My wife read your email the night of that council meeting, and you mentioned you work with an organization of them?"
Abalone looked back and forth between the king and his mate, who had taken a seat on one of the other padded chairs, and was pouring herself a ginger ale. The pair of them lied, he thought suddenly. They were very much together, their deference and devotion to one another obvious.
"Abe."
"Ah." Not at all what he had expected from this on any level, although he was overjoyed at the idea that the Glimera had been thwarted.
"Yes, but it's more of a loose affiliation, really. There are issues that need sorting, and not that I was trying to step into your role."
The king put up his hands.
"Hey, I'm grateful. I just want to help."
Abalone swallowed past a dry throat.
"You want a soda?" someone asked.
It was a brother with jet black hair, a goatee, and icy silver eyes, as well as a set of tattoos on one of his temples.
"Please, thank you,"
Abalone replied weakly. 2 seconds later, the fighter delivered a cold Coke in a glass, which turned out to be the best thing Abalone had ever tasted. Composing himself, he mumbled,
"Forgive me. I feared that I had found your disfavor."
"Not at all." Rath smiled again. "You're going to be very, very useful to me."
Abalone stared into the fizzing glass.
"My father served yours."
"Yeah, very well, I might add.
Through your blood's generosity, mine has prospered."
Abalone took another sip, his shaking hand making the ice tinkle.
"May I say something about your father?"
The king seemed to stiffen.
"Yeah."
Abalone looked up to the sunglasses.
"The night he and your mother were killed, a part of my father died too. He was never the same thereafter. I can remember our house being in mourning for a full 7 years, the mirrors draped in black cloth, the incense burning, the threshold marked with a black jam."
Rath rubbed his face. "They were good people, my parents."
Abalone put the soda aside and shifted off the armchair, getting on his knees before his king.
"I will serve you just as my father did, down to the bone and marrow."
Abalone was dimly aware that others had filed into the room and were looking at him. He cared not. History had come full circle, and he was prepared to carry forward with pride. Rath nodded once.
"I'm making you my chief cleric. Right here and now.
Saxton," he barked out, "what do I need to do?"
A cultured voice answered smoothly, "You just did it all. I'll draw up the paperwork." The king smiled and put out his palm.
"You're the first member of my court." Boom! "I know where you went last night."
Score stopped in the middle of the alley and did not turn around.
"Do you?"
Throw's voice was flat.
"I followed you. I saw her."
Now he pivoted on his combat boot. Narrowing his eyes on his second in command, he said,
"Be of care what you say next, and do not ever do that again."
Throw stomped his boot.
"I talked to her. What the hell are you doing?"
Score moved so fast that it was less than a heartbeat later that the other male was up against a brick building, struggling to draw breath through the hold on his throat.
"That is not for you to question."
Score made sure he did not take out a dagger, but it was tough.
What transpires within my private life is no concern of yours. And allow me to state this clearly. Do not ever approach her again if you want to live to die of natural causes. Throw's voice was strangled. When we take the throne, no. No more of that. Throw's brows punched up into his forehead. No. Skor released the mail and stalked around. My ambitions have altered.
Because of a female?
Before he could stop himself, he palmed one of his guns and aimed it directly at Throw's head. Watch your tone. Throw slowly lifted his palms. I only question the turnabout. It is not for her. It has nothing to do with her. What then? At least Skor was able to speak the truth. That male gave up a female he was bonded to in order to retain the throne. I have it on good authority of his actions. If he is willing to do that, he can have the fucking thing. Throw exhaled slowly and didn't say anything more. The fighter just stared into Skor's eyes. What? Skor demanded. If you want me to say anything further, you're going to have to lower that weapon. It was a while before his arm listened to the commands of his brain. Speak. You are making a mistake. We were able to make great progress, and there will be another angle. Not from us, there won't. Do not make this choice on an infatuation. That was the problem, though. He feared he'd fallen far harder than that. I am not. Throw walked around, hands on hips, head shaking back and forth. This is a mistake. Then form your own cabal and attempt to prevail. It won't work, but I will promise you a good burial if I'm still around to see it. Your ambitions served mine own. Throw regarded him steadily. I do not want to relinquish the future so blithely. I do not know this word blithely, but I do not care of its definition. This is where we are. You may leave if you like, or you may remain and fight with us as we always have done.
You are serious.
The past does nay interest me as much as it used to. So go if you want. Take the others if you wish. But our life in the old country sufficed for many years, so I failed to see why the king's identity should be of such concern for you. That is because my blade had not been honed on the stone of the crown. What shall you do now? That is all I care about. I fear I do not know you anymore. Once that would have been a blessing. No longer. Skor shrugged. "'Tis on you." Throw looked up as if searching for inspiration from the heavens. "Fine," he said tightly. "Fine what?" "Try as I might." The male's face became grim. "My fealty is to you." Skor nodded once. "Your pledge is accepted." But he wasn't fooling himself. Throw's ambition was between them now, and no exchange of words or even parchment was going to change that. They were not done with this, not in the slightest, and mayhap it would take nights or weeks or years before the split came to the fore. But that which was due would follow them from this moment forward. And he feared that the currency was female. Chapter 69. Sitting at his desk at the Iron Mask, Trez had had it with the whole club thing. The noise, the smell, the humans, hell, even the paperwork was getting to him. Shoving away about 150 receipts, he was ready to explode as he rubbed his eyes. And then, as he lowered his eyes readjusted to the fluorescent light, a pixelation fuzzing out his vision. Another migraine? He picked up a random piece of paper and checked to see if he could read the text. No blind spot. Yet.
Giving up on trying to get anything done, he sat back in his chair, crossed his arms over his chest, and glared across at the closed door. The distant thumping of the bass made him think he needed to get some earplugs. What he really wanted to do was get the fuck out of here, and not just this club, or the one that was going up in that warehouse across town. He wanted out of the whole cock-sucking enterprise, from the booze sales to the prostitutes, from the money to the madness. For shit's sake, every time he closed his eyes, he saw Selena's face, heard her voice as she said she wanted to get dressed, smelled the scent of her disappointment. As he thought back over their relationship, if you could call it that, he defined things in terms of pullouts, failed conversations, half-truths, hidden secrets. All his. And it was weird. His brother had been yakking at him to clean up his act for how long? Telling him he had to get a grip and stop the sexing, warning him that time was getting tighter, hoping and praying that a turnaround would come, even when there had been no hope of that ever occurring. Meanwhile, he'd been bawling whores in public places, getting migraines and riding a huge wave of self-destruction, popping his collar and paying no attention. In spite of all of I.M.'s best efforts, Selena had been the one to make him really see himself. Seemed disrespectful to his brother to admit that, but there you go. God. He prayed the queen had a daughter who was chosen. Maybe that way, at least part of this nightmare would be over. The knock on his door was soft, and he caught a whiff of body spray even before the thing opened. "Come in," he muttered. The working girl who walked in was leggy enough to be a model, but her face wasn't quite there. Nose a little too big, lips a little too small, eyes a little off-center. And that was even after all the plastic surgery. Still, from a distance or in the dark, she was a goddamn knockout. "I heard you want to see me?" Her voice was up to phone sex standards, deep and raspy, and her hair, as she pushed it over her shoulder, was naturally thick. "Yeah." Good thing she didn't know him well enough to be aware he was half dead. "I've got a special client who..." "Is this the guy they've been talking about?" Her eyes widened in a rush. "Like, the sex god?" "Yeah. I wonder if you can go to an apartment tomorrow and meet him." He and Sex had agreed to be on a once-a-week schedule, but when your blackmailer called you up and wanted a date, you went with it. "I'll introduce you and..." Oh, fuck yeah. The other girls were talking about him. He's a stallion. She started running her hands up and down her body, cupping her breasts and her sex. "Tomorrow, noon." He gave her his Commodore address. "I'll meet you there." "Thanks, boss." As her eyes narrowed, he had a feeling what was coming next. "Sure enough," she said. "What can I do to show my gratitude?" He shook his head. "Nada. Just come on time tomorrow." "Are you sure?" Staring across at her, part of him wanted to give in. It was so much easier that way. Like falling backward into a swimming pool in July. Splash, and you weren't hot anymore. The problem was, in that hypothetical, he didn't know how to swim. And every single time he let himself go just to get cooled down, he ended up underwater, unable to breathe. The struggle to get to the surface simply wasn't worth the momentary relief. "Thank you, baby girl, but I gotta pass." The woman smiled. "You got a female there, boss?" Trez opened his mouth to say no. "Yeah, I do." "Huh," he thought. "Yeah, right." After their happy little convo, Selena had not come down to the Brotherhood house again, and he sure as hell hadn't gone up to the Great Camp. He could still remember exactly what she'd looked like as she'd stared at him. Eventually, He'd gotten up and left her room, after the silence had stretched way out. Yeah, sure, he could have pressed her for some kind of closure or something, but the bottom line was, whether or not he had to go back to the Sahizbi, he'd still contaminated himself. What he had to offer her or anybody else wasn't worth the breath to apologize with.
Oh, that's big gossip, the whore said. Can I tell the other girls?
Yeah, sure. Whatever. She all but danced out of his office. As the door reclosed, he went back to staring at it. On its flat plain, all he could see was Selina. Sure as if she'd died and her ghost had come to haunt him. For a moment, he was actually crazy enough to wish there was some unfinished business between them that he could use as an excuse to see her. Then again, the reality was, he could come at her in a thousand different ways, and all he had to offer was himself. Not good enough yesterday. Today, or tomorrow. Deep inside of him, a shift began. At first he just recognized it as an errant thought, but then, as that thought resonated, he realized it went much, much further than that. As he looked into the future, he saw nothing of substance in his life except his brother. Iam was it, the extent of any value he had in this world, and abruptly, the idea of turning himself over to the queen and her daughter, becoming a sexual slave imprisoned in the walls of the palace, used only for his cock and his ejaculate, didn't seem like anything very different from the way he had been living his life. He had been fucking things regularly, and it hadn't mattered. It wasn't like any of those women had meant a goddamn thing. Why would the queen's daughter be any different? Well, shit. The only thing that wouldn't be the same? His brother would be free to live his life. Liberated. And that would be the only true, honorable thing Trez could do. Sitting back in his chair, he realized, not a bad way to end things. Sola left her condo even though it was the middle of the night. She just couldn't stand the confines anymore, and the terrace wasn't doing it for her wanderlust. Heading down the concrete steps, she went past the glowing pool to the pathway that cut through the bushes. On the far side, the beach stretched out a mile in both directions, the strong, warm wind hitting her in the face. She picked right for no particular reason and put her hands in the pockets of her light jacket, feeling for her phone. It had remained silent. And as she looked out over the dark ocean and listened to the waves on the shore, she knew it wasn't going to ring. Oh, sure, she'd get calls from her grandmother. Maybe the phone company. Maybe the repair shop for her new beater of a car. But not from the 518 area code. Stopping, she watched the moonlight that streamed from behind her touch the tops of the restless sea. Even though it made her queasy, she deliberately put herself back in the trunk of that car, feeling the cold and the vibration. The fear of knowing that whatever was coming next was going to hurt. A lot. Holding all that tightly to her chest, she reminded herself yet again why the phone staying quiet was a good thing. At first, she wasn't sure exactly what the tip-off was. Not a smell, no. The wind was coming at her, and it wasn't the sight of anything. As she searched the landscape behind her, seeing scruffy bushes, another condo development, some kind of a lawn, a pool, there was nothing that moved. No sound, either. A sail? She breathed into the wind. She walked toward the bushes, then jogged. But when she got close to them, he wasn't there. "A sail!" she called out. "I know you're here!" Her voice didn't carry far because of the wind. Backtracking, she jogged closer to home. "A sail!" Her heart was thumping in her chest, a treacherous hope vibrating through her until she felt like she was floating over the sand. That optimism was like gasoline in a tank, however. The longer there was no reply, the lower the level got, until she slowed, stopped. A sail? She looked all around, praying to see him, even though it was the last thing she needed. But the black-haired man she was searching for did not answer her call. And eventually, that sense that she was being watched went away. As if the wind had taken it. As if it had never existed. On the way back to her place, she let the tears fall one by one without bothering to wipe them off. It was dark out. There was no one to see them. And nothing to hide from. She was on her own. Chapter 70. And so it went, the weeks and months passing, seasons changing from the bitter cold of winter to the wet, bracing winds of spring, to the sweet-scented nights that promised an early summer. By May, Wrath was used to measuring the time not by the calendar, or the up and down of the shutters of the mansion, or the meals at his own home. It was by the nights that he spent hearing the stories of his people, the real ones, the ones about life and death, and matings and divorces, and sicknesses and health. It was funny. As important as the vampire mating ceremony was to him, the human one he'd gone through with Beth got the metronome of existence better. His audiences with the commoners were all set up thanks to quiet, steady Abe, a.k.a. Abalone. But Wrath's responses to things were his own. And there was so much to do. Mediating disagreements in families, blessing the sons and daughters who were born, sharing grief with those who had suffered losses and joy with those who had had good fortune. As always, Beth was by his side, sitting with Abe during the audiences, checking the paperwork with Saxton when it was required, growing bigger in the belly every moment.
"We are here, my lord," Fritz said from the front of the Mercedes, "at Master Darius's."
"Thanks, my men." As he and George got out of the back, he paused and leaned in. "Hey, can you go and get more of those strawberries? She's got a craving for carrots again, too. And pickles. You better grab two of those jars with those tart motherfuckers."
"I shall be back right away, my lord. And I think I will get some of the frozen yogurt for her. She takes it with the chocolate chips."
"Oh, shit. Yeah. And don't forget the beets. Or the beef."
"I shan't."
"Hurry, okay? Iam's bringing her in from Pottery Barn." Wrath shut the door. "Let's do it," he said to George. And the dog knew right where to go, leading him to the entrance, which Wrath opened with his mind. "Hi, honey. I'm home," he hollered.
"Did you bring flowers?" Lassiter shouted back.
"Not for you."
"Damn it. Well, I'm on deck tonight with Tor, so can we get moving? There's a full list of appointments. But I want to get back for Hell's Kitchen."
"Don't you DVR that shit?" Wrath groused as he and George went into the old dining room.
"Yeah, but I have poor impulse control. It was on at 9, okay, and I hate waiting. I put George's fresh water down by your chair, BT-dub."
"At least you're a dog lover. That's the only thing that saves you."
"Ha! I have wings and a halo, you cranky son of a bitch. I'm already perma-saved."
"Just our luck." "Hey, my brother," V said as he came through the archway and lit a hand rolled. "Where's your girl?"
Lassiter cut in. "She's got to be coming back soon, right?"
Wrath had to smile as he took his seat. About the only time that annoying SOB got serious was when it came to Beth, and he had to admit that was kinda endearing. "She back yet?" Rage asked as he walked into the room. "How long can it take to order baby furniture?" Butch demanded while making his appearance.
"Weeks," Z answered.
You have no idea. And so it went. Everyone arriving with the same question, from Blay and Quinn to Fury and Revenge. The only one who didn't ask it out loud was John. But he didn't have to. Beth's brother had been a quiet, worried presence since they'd made the announcement of the surprise pregnancy. And Rath loved the guy for it. John never got in the way, but he was always there, listening to Beth, being supportive, talking with her, bringing her movies. Funny, the gravity with which he treated the situation made Rath think of Darius. God, he wished the brother had survived to see what was coming in... Was it only 4 weeks? Jesus. Every time Rath thought about the impending event, he found he couldn't breathe. But he forced himself to remember all the checkups IAM had been taking his wife to. Beth was having a perfect pregnancy. She was healthy, happy, eating and drinking, and feeding well. Not that Dr. Sam, the human physician she went to, knew about that. And the heart rate was great. And his son was great. It was almost too easy. 4 weeks to go. Leland! Rath barked as he exploded up from his chair. There were all kinds of deep-voiced greetings, but his brothers got out of the way so that she had a clear shot into his arms. And as he lifted her up, he was careful to put no pressure on her belly. How are you? He whispered in her ear, knowing that one of these days she was going to answer that she was having contractions. Fine and dandy. Oh, my God, I got the best stuff. I had to go blue. I mean, whatever, we're having a boy. The crib and dressing table are perfect. Right, I am? The shadow answered, perfect. No doubt the poor bastard had no interest in the shit at all, but that didn't matter. He was another one who had stuck by Beth and been her protector in the human world. And Rath knew the why, of course. It was IAM's way of paying the household back for letting him and his it's-complicated brother stay at the mansion after their pad of the Commodore had been compromised. Plus, it was pretty obvi that he liked Beth in a non-romantic kind of way. Right. I know, right? Beth hugged Rath's neck so hard he couldn't swallow. I'm so excited. I want to meet him now. Is this nesting? Rath asked in the direction of where he'd heard Z's voice last. Yeah, and wait for it. You still have diaper genies and bottles to get through. We're going born free, Beth informed him, like he knew what that meant. In case my milk doesn't come in. Rath just sat down in the chair and arranged her on his lap, content to ease back and let her enjoy making her report. And the brothers and the fighters? They rallied right around, asking questions like big brothers would. Any one of them would have laid down his life for her or that young in her womb. It was enough to make a male have to blink a little faster. As Rath held his female, he found his hand making a circle on her rock-hard belly, and his brain reverted back to just before sunset. Once he'd gotten over his hang-up about sex, things had gone back to the way they'd been right after they'd met. Hormonal surges being what they were and all. This late in the game, they had to do it with her on top, and that was more than fine with him. He loved palming her now heavy breasts with his hands and feeling her core take him in a new way because of the way her body had changed shape. Matter of fact, maybe there was time for a quickie before... Hey, Abes. Yo, Abe. What's up, Albacore? Naturally, Lassiter was the one who refused to get that name right. As Abalone stuttered through his greetings, you had to smile. The guy still couldn't quite get used to the brothers, but they were used to him, and so was Rath. My lord, my lady, good evening. Abalone... How's your daughter? Beth said. Yeah, Abe. How'd that date go last night? Pin drop time. The Brotherhood had adopted the male and his only young, and woe was the young Turk who took the girl out and didn't treat her right. Well,
I don't believe it was a love match, but she was returned a full 30 minutes before curfew.
Good. Rath nodded. That means he can keep his legs. So, what have we got on deck for us tonight?
It's a full roster, the aristocrat reported. The first couple we'll see have just had a grand young, and they want to ask you if they may bring the mother in with the wee one. Their daughter is not married to the father, however, and they are concerned it will offend you.
Absolutely not.
Abalone's tone remained calm. But it's important to them that they ask permission and acknowledge this in person with you.
Fine. Cool. When do I get to meet the kid?
Abalone laughed. Tomorrow evening.
I'll be here. And who's after that?
A cousin of mine, actually. He's seeking permission, too. As the gentle male went on and on, detailing the family interrelationships, Rath was once again in awe. Abe was so low-key and respectful, never once stepping out of place. And yet every single fucking night he provided this wellspring of knowledge and compassion. It was damn impressive. And as Rath sat back and listened to all the preamble, he was struck by how he could do this for fucking ever. He really could. Especially with his Shellen front and center, his dog next to him, and his brothers surrounding them all. With a feeling of great dread, Anha put her hand upon her swelling belly and watched her mate gird himself for the night ahead. In the flickering light from the hearth and the candles, everything was different about him. She had noticed the change coming over the last number of months, but on this eve, all that had been subtle appeared to have coalesced at once, the culmination having arrived. His body was different now, harder, more defined, larger. And his expression was not the same, at least not when this new mood of his settled upon his shoulders. As if sensing her regard, he looked over at her. "How long will you be gone?" she asked. "And do not lie. I know for what purpose you are leaving." He turned away from her, to the oak table on which clothing she had never seen before had materialized, brought in by the Brotherhood. Everything was black. "I shall return at dawn." His voice was lower than normal. And then she realized that he was putting on a leather strapping o'er his chest, just as the brothers wore.
"You are going to fight?"
she whispered through a closed throat. When he finally answered her, it was after he'd put two black daggers handle down over his heart. "I shall return at dawn."
"You're going to kill them, aren't you?"
"Do you want me to answer that?"
"Yes."
Rath, her mate, her love, the father of her nascent young, approached her where she sat afore her vanity mirror. When he got down upon his knees, it was a relief, because he was almost familiar that way, especially as he looked into her eyes. "I shall do what needs doing," he said. She put her hands on his face, tracing the features, thinking back to all the dawns he'd come home bloodied and limping, swollen and stiff. But lately, he had kept to his schedule with the males, and not returned injured. So she should have known it was time.
"Be safe," she implored. "We need you."
"I will come back unto you. Always."
At that, he kissed her hard, and then he left through the chamber door. Before it closed behind him, she saw that the brothers had lined up on either side of the stone corridor, each with a torch. They bowed to her Helrin as he walked out. Alone. Dropping her head into her hands, she knew that all she could do was pray. Chapter 71. As Rath saw the first of his appointments, Beth snuck out into the kitchen and snagged a bowl of fresh strawberries that Fritz had bought for her at the local Hannaford. Man, after the past number of months, she had gotten used to the spoiling,
a benefit Bella had told her to enjoy, but which had taken some time to become chill with. Everyone had been, and was being, so kind. The brothers and their mates, the staff, John Matthew, the shadows. It was incredible. Just like the pregnancy. By some miracle, she was trending exactly like a normal human pregnancy, well into her 8th month and feeling great. She had plenty of stamina, no swollen ankles, no stretch marks, and a baby that did laps under her ribcage every time she ate. Especially if there was sugar involved. It was nothing that she had prepared herself for. Disasters? Shit, yeah. She had been all about them. After that initial shock at the doctor's, she had naturally gone right to the internet and terrified herself stupid with all the different things that could go wrong. The one saving grace had been that, by that point, she had already gotten herself out of that hairy first trimester when most miscarriages happened. Although, unfortunately, that kneading that had kicked in was a wild card that she hadn't been able to fully relax about for another month. But yeah, the worry had mostly passed now that she was pulling into the final 4-week lap. And sure, labor was going to be a bitch. But no, she wasn't going to try to white-knuckle it with a no-drug birth plan. And any time she got a little rattly, she just reminded herself that millions upon millions of women and females had done this all before her. What her birth plan did entail was IM and Trez both being available at the drop of a hat for the next 4 weeks. Dr. Sam had promised to make herself free no matter the hour, day or night, a little commitment she suspected IM had instilled with a mental sleight of hand. He had worked a number of those, discreetly, of course. And thus they'd been successful in keeping the race's identity on the DL. She was hoping that, like a lot of women, she went into labor at night, so Rath could be a part of at least some of it. But they'd both agreed, even though it was going to kill him, her safety and the safety of the baby came first. And that meant she was going to have to go to Dr. Sam.
"Are the berries to your liking, madam?"
Fritz asked. Looking across her father's kitchen, she nodded. "They're perfect." As the butler beamed like he'd won the lottery, she finished what was in the bowl and allowed him to take the thing from her. Heading back out into the dining room, she was careful to make no noise as she went across to her padded seat. Rath was sitting in the armchair he favored, the one on the left, the one that Saxton's desk was behind. Across from him, in the matching chair, a male was sitting with his hands clasped hard on his knees, his shoulders hunched, his face gray. The clothes he was wearing were not fancy, just the kind of stuff you could get at Target. And his watch was nothing like a Rolex, just a matte black rubber-strapped one. Rath leaned forward and offered his palm. "What happened?" The male rocked back and forth in the chair.
"She..."
All at once he looked at Beth, his face blanching even further. As she stiffened, she put her hand over her belly. "Oh, hell." "Talk to me," Rath said in a low voice. "She..." At this point, the male began to whisper so softly that nothing carried, but it was clear that Rath understood every word. And as she watched her husband's hands clench, those forearms bunching up, she knew what it was about. Deaths. From childbearing. She had heard for so long about how the vampire race suffered on the birthing bed, as they called it, but she'd had no true appreciation for their losses before. Doing this with the commoners now, she was routinely horrified. So many dead. Mothers and children. Just as her own mom had died. It was a tragedy that medical science couldn't seem to make much of a dent in. Say what you would about Havers. He had a clinic outfitted with all kinds of modern technology, and yet bad things happened. Seemingly all the time. Rath reached out his great arms and put his hands on the male's shoulders. He spoke softly as well, but whatever he was saying, the husband who had lost everything was nodding.
They stayed like that for a very long time. When the meeting was finally over, the two of them stood up and embraced, the civilian so much smaller than her husband. Before the male left, he kissed Rath's ring. Abalone escorted the commoner out, talking quietly with him, as Rath slowly lowered himself back down. His brows were tight, his mouth a grim line. As she stood up, she winced and had to stretch her back. Going over, she wanted to pull him tightly to her, but figured a reminder of the pregnancy was probably not what he needed at the moment. "I can't help him," Rath said in a voice that cracked. "I can't help where he's at. Sometimes knowing you're not alone is enough. I'm not so sure about that." But he took her hands and brought them to his lips, kissing her knuckles one by one. And as a sudden wave of exhaustion hit her, he seemed to recognize it. "How about you head home?" he said. "How did you know?" "You just yawned."
"Did I?"
"Have Fritz take you." As she arched her back, she wanted to stay, but had to be realistic. Maybe walking around the mall for all that time was a little much. "Go on, take a rest. I'll be home in a couple of hours, and I'll put some shitty television on for us, okay?"
"That sounds like heaven."
"Good." He kissed her once, and then seemed to have to do it again. "I love you."
"I love you, too."
"Fritz," her husband called out. "Car." She made sure to pet George a couple of times and tell him where she was going before she left. And then she was out into the night, getting into the rear of the Mercedes, heading for the mansion. Letting her head fall back against the seat, she could feel herself already beginning to doze off.
"I'm afraid I'm not very good company," she said to Fritz.
"Just rest, madam."
"Good idea, Fritz."
As Beth departed, Rath leaned back in the armchair, and was not at ease in the slightest. "She died in front of me, held my lifeless son in my hands."
"My lord?"
"I'm sorry, what?" He shook himself. "What?" Abalone cleared his throat.
"Would you like a break, sire?"
"Yeah, just give me a minute." Taking George's halter, he said, "Kitchen." Walking through the flap door with his dog, he was relieved that Fritz had already left and that the brothers stayed back. Shit. The minute he'd smelled the pain and sorrow of that civilian, he knew that all had been lost for the male. And not in a material sense. People didn't get into that kind of agony over things. And as usual, Abalone knew the full story. But Rath preferred to let the people tell him the details in person. He wanted to hear things directly from them. Childbirth had not actually claimed the female's life this time. A car accident. Rath had expected it to be the former, but that was not the way destiny had played out. Nope. The female had lived through the birth, and so had the child. They'd been killed by a drunk driver on the way home from Haver's clinic. The casual cruelty of fate was sometimes a ballbuster on an epic scale. Unbelievable. Going over to the table, he pulled out a chair and sat down. He was pretty sure he was facing the windows, not that he could see out of them. So many stories he'd heard, but this one, Jesus Christ, it got to him. He didn't know how long he sat there, but eventually, V put his head in. "You okay?"
"Nope."
"You want to reschedule, True?"
"Yeah."
"All right."
"V."
"Yeah?"
"Do you remember that vision you told me about, where I was looking up at the face in the sky and the future was in my hands?"
"Yeah."
"What?"
Abruptly, he relived that civilian's anguish.
"Nah, never mind. I don't want to know."
Sometimes, information wasn't a good thing. If that commoner could have seen the future,
It wouldn't have changed the outcome. He would have just spent the remaining time with his female and his young, terrified of what was coming.
"I'll clear the decks," the brother said after a moment. The flap door closed with a thump-bump. For no apparent reason, he thought of his father and his mother, and wondered what the night of his birth had been like. They'd never spoken of it, but he'd never asked either. There had always been something else going on. Plus, he'd been too young to care about that stuff. As he tried to picture his own child's arrival, he couldn't imagine the stream of events. It was a hypothetical too emotionally charged to resonate. But there was one thing that was abruptly crystal fucking clear. He just wasn't sure how to get around it. As he stewed on things, memories from the last couple of months filtered into him. Stories and problems. Gifts given and received. After all the struggle he'd brought to doing the king's job before, it had been such a revelation to actually love what he was doing. He hadn't even missed the fighting. Hell, there had been too many other challenges to confront and overcome. Battles, after all, weren't always waged in the field, and sometimes enemies weren't armed with conventional weapons. Sometimes they were even ourselves. Finally, he knew exactly why his father had gotten so much out of being on the throne. He totally fucking got it. And it was funny. The one thing that so many of the people had in common was love for their family, their mates, their parents, their children. All that seemed to come first. Always. Family first. The next generation first. He thought back to the night his parents had been slaughtered. The one thing they had done before that door had been broken down? Hide him. Keep him safe. Preserve him. And it hadn't been about ensuring the future of the throne. That was not at all what they'd said as they'd locked him in that crawlspace. "I love you." That had been the only message that had mattered when their time had run out. Not "be a good king." Not "follow in my footsteps." Not "make me proud or else." "I love you." It was the tie that bound, even across the divides of death and time. As he imagined his son coming into the world, he was pretty damn sure one of the first things he was going to say was, "I love you." "Rath?" He jumped and turned toward the sound of Saxton's voice. "Yeah. Sorry, just a little in my head. I'm finished with all my paperwork from last night and tonight." Rath turned back to the windows he could not see. "You worked fast." "Actually, it's 3 in the morning. You've been sitting there for about 5 hours. "Oh." And yet he didn't move. "Most of the brothers left hours ago. Fritz is still here. He's upstairs cleaning." "Oh. If you don't need anything." "There is something," he heard himself say. "Of course. How can I help?" "I need to do something for my son." "A bequest?" As Rath started working the whole thing through in his head, he was a little freaked out. God, you'd think that great corners in life should come with a warning sign at the side of the proverbial road. A little yellow number that announced which direction you were going to go in, and maybe offered a reduced speed kind of advice. Then again, he and his Shellen had been pregnant months before her needing. So life did its own thing, didn't it? Yeah, kinda. Chapter 72. It was as he had promised. Rath was good to the word he had given his Shellen. He was, in fact, back at dawn. As he rode toward home upon his horse, he was exhausted to the point of agony, unable to hold himself up for more than a walking gait. But then again, there was another reason for his slow progress. Though he had gone out on his own, he did not return as such.
There were 6 dead bodies being dragged over the ground behind him and his steed, and 2 more to the rear of his saddle. The former he had tied with ropes at the ankles. The latter were secured to the horse with hooks and netting. And the others he'd killed had not had enough left of their remains to take with him. He could smell nothing but the blood he'd shed. He heard nothing but the muffled rush of the bodies over the dirt of the road. He knew nothing except that he had murdered each one of them by hand. The wooded glen he proceeded through was the last distance to be crossed before the castle. And indeed, as he came out into a clearing, there it was, rising ugly out of the earth. He did not relish what he had done. Unlike a barn cat who enjoyed his duty, the mice he had slain had not been a source of sly happiness for him. But as he thought of his unborn young, he knew that he had made the world a safer place for his son or daughter. And as he considered his beloved mate, as well as the death of his own father, he was well aware that that which had been uncharacteristic to his nature had been very necessary indeed. The drawbridge o'er the moat landed in a rush, providing him entrance as if he had been waited for. And he had been. Anha ran out onto the planks, the fading moonlight catching her dark hair and her red robes. He had known her for so little time when judged by the passage of seasons, but through the course of events, he believed they had been together for lifetimes. The Brotherhood was with her. Pulling up on the reins, he knew she saw everything as her hands went to her mouth, and torture had to take her elbow to keep her upright. He wished she had not come. But there was no going back now on any of it. Dismounting, even though he was not even upon the bridge, he left his horse where it was and crossed onto the thick planks. He thought perhaps she might run from him. But no, it was the opposite. "Are you well enough?" she said as she threw herself at him. His arms were weak as they went around her. "Aye. You lie." He dropped his head into her sweet-smelling hair. "Aye." At least with her, he did not have to pretend. The truth was, he as yet feared for the future. He may have taken his revenge out on these traitors, but there would be more. Kings were targets for the ambitions of others. That was reality. Closing his eyes, he wished there was a way out of the legacy, and he worried for his future son, if he had one. Daughters had a chance. Sons were cursed. But he could not change who he was born to be. He just prayed for the courage that had served him this night to come again when it was needed most. At least now he had proved to himself and his beloved that he was not just a leader in peacetime. In war, he could wield the sword if he had to. "I love you," he said. As his mate shuddered against him, he knew she was going to shudder again on the morrow evening, when she saw what he was going to do to the heads of those dead bodies. Messages had to be sent in order to be received. "Let us go on to our chambers," he said, tucking her into his chest. As he nodded to the brothers, he knew they would take care of his horse and his prey. There would be time for the beheadings later. Now, he just wanted some sanity amid the madness. Heading into their castle, she was, as always, his only tether. "If we have a son," he murmured. "Yes?" She looked up at him. "What for him?" Wrath glanced down into the face that stared upon him, the beautiful face that defined his hours as well as his years. "I hope he finds someone like you." "In truth?" she whispered. "Yes. I pray for him to be half as lucky as I." As Anha squeezed around his waist, her voice grew rough. "And for a daughter, a male half as good as her father." Wrath kissed the top of her head and continued them onward, through the great hall and up to their chamber, the Brotherhood with them, but keeping a discreet distance. "Yes," he thought,
To survive, one must not be alone. And one must have a partner of worth. Possess that, and you are richer than any king and queen who e'er roamed the earth. Chapter 73 Wrath saw his mother for the first time in 330 years that following day. On some level, he knew it had to be a dream. He had been blind for too long to be seduced into thinking that reality had suddenly changed. Plus, hello, she'd been dead for centuries. And yet, as she came to him out of the darkness, she was as alive as he could have wished her to be, moving with ease, wearing a red velvet gown in the old style. "Mammon?" he said with wonder. As he lifted his head, he realized with a shock that it was from his pillow. And shit! This was his room. He could tell by the subtle twinkling of the walls. His first instinct was to flip over and find... Beth was right beside him, lying safe and sound under the blankets. Her face turned toward him, her dark hair all over the pillow that matched his own. And he could tell by the shape of her belly that, yes, she was still pregnant. Jesus Christ! He could see her. "Beth," he said roughly. "Beth, I see you, Leland. Wake up! I see you! I see you! Wrath!" At the sound of his mammon's voice, he wrenched back around. She was right beside the bed now, her arms crossed, her hands tucked into the voluminous sleeves of that dress. "Mammon, I do not know if you shall recall this, but you came to me once." God, her voice was so gentle, just as he'd remembered, and he almost shut his eyes just so he could memorize the sound. Except no, he wasn't going to get cheated out of one nanosecond of sight. Wait, what had she said? "I did. I was dying, and you came to me from out of the mist of the fade, and you told me to follow you home. You made me stop and return with you." "I don't remember. It is a debt I have owed you for a very long time." Her smile was peaceful as the Mona Lisa's. "And I shall repay it now, because I love you so very, very much." "Repay? What are you talking about?" "Wake up, Wrath. Wake up right now." Abruptly, that voice changed, becoming urgent. "Call the healer. You must call the healer if you wish to save her life." "Save her... Beth's life?" "Wake up, Wrath. Right away. Call the healer." "What are you?" "Wrath, wake up!" In a sudden rush, like he'd been catapulted out of REM sleep, Wrath shot upright. "Beth!" he screamed. What? As he twisted around to his wife, he cursed at the blackness all around him. Goddamn fucking dream, teasing him with what he didn't have. "What?" Beth cried. "Shit. Sorry. I'm sorry." He reached out and soothed her. Soothed himself. "Sorry. Fucked up dream." "Oh, jeez. You scared me." She laughed, and he heard her hit the pillow as if she'd let herself collapse. "Good thing we sleep with the bathroom light on." Frowning, he turned to the side of the bed where his mother had stood, and... no, she wasn't really here. "Who?" "Sorry." Cracking his neck, he threw his leg over the side of the bed. "I'll be right back." He gave things a good stretch, and as his spine let out a snap, crackle, pop, he thought fondly of the conversation he'd had with Payne as soon as he'd gotten home. They were going to start sparring again, and not because she was a female. It was because she was a hell of a good fighter, and he wanted to get back in the game now. In the bathroom, he petted George, was curled up on the Orvis dog bed Butch had given him for Christmas, and then took a piss and had a face wash.
When he got back in bed, he intended to return to Lights Outland. Except as he lay flat, he frowned.
Listen, are you feeling okay?
His Beth yawned.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm glad I headed back here when I did. The sleep helped, and lying down feels better. I've got a stiff back from that mall crawl still. Trying to sound casual, he asked,
When's your next appointment with the doctor?
Not till Friday. We're going weekly now.
Why do you ask?
No reason. As he fell silent, she curled in against him and let out a sigh like she was resettling for the duration. He lasted about a minute and a half.
What do you think about calling the doctor?
Calling as in... Wait, you mean right now?
Well, yeah.
He could feel her recoil.
But why?
Yeah, like he could tell her anything along the lines of, My dead mom said so.
I don't know. Just maybe she could give you a checkup or something.
Rath, that's not appropriate, especially considering there's nothing wrong. He felt her playing with his hair. Is this about that civilian who lost his wife and baby?
It wasn't during childbirth.
Oh, I thought that...
Maybe we could just call her.
There's no reason to.
What's her number?
He reached for his phone.
I'm calling her.
Rath, have you lost your mind?
Fuck it. He'd just do 411.
Beth kept talking at him as he waited for the operator to come on.
Yeah, hi, in Caldwell, New York. The number of Dr. Sam... What's your last name?
You've lost your mind.
I'm going to pay for the visit.
No, not you, operator.
As the last name came back to him, he said it and spelled it twice.
Yeah, connect me to the office, thanks.
Rath, this is...
Just as the call went through, Beth went quiet.
Beth? He asked with a frown.
Sorry, she said. My back let out a twinge. You know what? I'm wearing running shoes next time I go walking like that. Now, will you hang up and...
Yeah. Hi. This is a medical emergency. I need Dr. Sam to come to our home. My wife's a patient of hers. 36 weeks.
Symptoms?
My wife's pregnant. How much time have you got?
Rath...
Beth said in a small voice.
What do you mean you can't... Rath!
And that was when he shut up, and knew his mother had been right. Cranking his head toward his wife, he said with dread,
What?
I'm bleeding. The definition of terror changed when things weren't just about you. And nothing was less about yourself than when you were 36 weeks pregnant... You felt a welling between your legs, and it was not your water breaking. At first, Beth thought she'd lost control of her bladder, but as she moved the blankets aside and shifted positions, she saw something on the sheets. She'd never seen blood so bright before. And shit, her lower back was suddenly killing her.
"What's going on?" Rath demanded.
"I'm bleeding," she repeated. Things happened so fast at that point. It was almost like being in the back of a speeding car, everything whirring by too quick to catch.
Rath shouting into the phone, another call being made, Doc Jane and V arriving at a dead run, and then faster still, moving, 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 everyone around her, while she felt curiously still and muffled. When she was transferred onto the gurney, she looked over at where she'd been on the bed and shuddered at the neon stain. It was huge, like someone had poured out a gallon of paint underneath her.
"Is the baby going to be okay?"
she mumbled, some kind of shock taking over everything.
Is Rath going to be all right?"
People offered her compassion, but no real answers. But Rath, the big one, was right by her side, holding her hand, orienting himself with the help of the side of the gurney.
John appeared as they hit the second-story landing. He was wearing only boxers, his hair all messed up, his eyes alert. He took her other palm. She didn't remember much about the rush, rush, rush down into the tunnel, except for the fact that the pain was getting severe. Oh, and the ceiling lights were whipping by as she lay back, the rhythmic pulsing like she was in a Star Wars movie about to go into warp speed. Why couldn't she hear anything? As she looked at the people around her, their mouths were all going, their eyes meeting urgently over her. Is little Rath going to be all right? Even her own voice was on a fader, the volume turned way down. She tried to make it louder. Is he going to be all right? And then they were dusting past the usual entrance into the training center, and going farther down, to an emergency door that had been created just for her, just for this situation. Except this was not her birth plan. She was supposed to go into the human world, where there were people to take care of her and little Rath, see to any problems he might have, be there for her and I Am if it was daylight, and Big Rath and John if it was night. Little Rath, she thought. Guess she had just named their son. As she arrived in the clinic, she just kept thinking she was not supposed to be here, especially as she looked up at that massive operating chandelier in the main OR. For some reason, she thought of all the times she had been down here, supporting a brother injured in the field, or going to a checkup with Layla, or... Doc Jane put her face in the way. Her lips moved slowly. Ath, can you hear me, Beth? Ah, good. Someone had cranked up the volume on the world. But her response didn't register. She couldn't hear her own voice. Okay, good. Doc Jane enunciated everything clearly. I want to do an ultrasound to rule out placenta previa, which is a complication where the placenta ends up in the lower part of the uterus. But I'm worried you have an abruption. What? That? Beth mumbled. Are you having pain? Lower back. Doc Jane nodded and put her hands on Beth's belly. If I press... Beth moaned. Just make sure Rath is okay. They wheeled the ultrasound machine over, and her nightgown was cut away. As that gel was squirted onto her stomach and the light dimmed, she didn't look at the monitor. She stared at her husband's face. That wonderful, masculine face was utterly terrified. He wasn't wearing his sunglasses, and his pale green, unfocused eyes were roaming around the room as if he were desperate to see something, anything. How did you know, she whispered, that I was in trouble? His eyes snapped in her direction. My mother told me, in a dream. For some reason, that made her cry. That image of her husband growing wavy as the out-of-control nature of life came home to roost in the worst possible way. She cared about nothing except the baby, but there was not a single thing she could do to affect any outcome. Her body and the young were rolling those dice. Her mind... her will, her soul, all her dreams and desires, hopes and follies, not even at the table. Doc Jane's face came back. Eth? Beth? Are you with me? As she lifted her hand to get some hair out of her face, she realized they'd put a blood pressure cuff on her arm and run an IV, and that was not hair in the way. It was tears. Beth, the ultrasound is not showing me what I was hoping to see. The baby's heart rate is slowing, and you're still bleeding heavily. We need to get him out, okay? I'm very sure you have an abruption, and you're in danger as well as him. Okay? All she could do was look at Rath. What do we do? In a voice that was so cracked it was barely understandable, he said, Let her operate with Manny, okay? All right. Doc Jane came back in view. We're going to have to put you asleep.
I don't want to do an epidural because we don't have the time.
All right.
I love you, she said to Wrath. Oh, God. The baby.
Chapter 74. All Wrath had to go on was the smells in the room. Antiseptic in the air. Blood that terrified him. Fear from his Beth and the others all around him. Calm, cold reasoning on the parts of Doc Jane, Manny, and Elena. Hopefully, that last one was going to be a lifesaver. Abruptly, a new fragrance entered the mix. Astringent. Then there was a squeak beside him, as if someone had pulled up a chair, after which a broad hand shoved him down so he was sitting, and took his own in a grip so hard the bones nearly crushed. John Matthew. Hey, man, he said, aware that time had ground to a halt. Hey, man. In the end, all Wrath could do was squeeze her brother's palm back, and so the two of them stayed side by side together, frozen as medical terms were traded back and forth, and there were metal clanging sounds and hisses and suction noises. Doc Jane's voice was so even. Manny's replies were the same. They were like the inverse of the situation. As things got scarier, they became more focused and in control. Okay, I've got him. Wait, is it happening already? Wrath demanded. The ascending whistle next to him was the only reply he got. And then, the sound of a young's first wail. Is he alive? Wrath asked like a dumbass. Another whistle. And then he forgot about his son entirely. Beth! What about Beth? No one answered. Beth! He barked. John! What the fuck is going on? The scent of blood was thick in the air. So thick. Too thick. He couldn't breathe. He didn't think. He wasn't even alive. Beth! He whispered into the darkness. It was forever until Doc Jane came over to him, and by the closeness and direction of her voice, he knew she had knelt in front of him. Wrath, we've got a problem. The baby's fine. Elena's checking him out. But Beth is continuing to bleed even after I closed her uterus from the C-section. She's hemorrhaging very badly, and there's no sign that she's clotting. The safest thing to do is a hysterectomy. Do you know what that is? She was talking to him like he was stupid. Good thing, too. No. Even though he'd heard the word before. Hell, at this point, she would have had to define even the most common of terms. I need to take her uterus out. She's going to die, Wrath, if I don't. It means she won't be able to have any more children. I don't give a fuck about anything but her. Whatever you need to do, do it. Now. Okay, let's move, Manny. Where's my son? He called out abruptly. Give me my son. Not even a moment later, a small bundle was placed into his arms. So light. Too light to be alive. And yet his son was warm and breathing. Vital. He wanted to hold him because his Shellen was in this child. In every molecule of his living body, she was with him. And that meant, as he kept the young up against his heart, he was holding his Beth. What's happening? He whispered, not expecting a response. He let the tears fall as they might, probably on his son's face. Who the fuck cared? Chapter 75. Beth came out of the fuzzy Neverland like a cork, surfacing on still water. Bobbing along, things came and went out of focus. But the second her brain flipped back on, she yelled, Wrath! Right here. We're right here. Recoiling, she wrenched around in the hospital bed and felt an instant, oh, hell no, from her belly. And then nothing mattered. Sitting beside her bed,
in a chair that wasn't big enough. Her husband and her son were like two peas in a pod. The weeping that came out of her was utterly uncontrollable, welling up so fast it all but exploded from her soul. And man, her belly hurt like a bitch. As she reached over the side of the bed, her IV pulled, but she didn't care. And her menfolk came to her, Wrath standing up with that newborn and easing down right beside her on the hospital bed.
"Oh, my God, that's my baby," she heard herself say.
Little Wrath. Yep. She really had named him already. Was the spitting image of his father. Even the dusting of hair formed a widow's peak in the center of his forehead. And like he recognized her somehow, he opened his eyes as his father let her take the precious bundle.
"Hey there, big man."
Because even though he weighed how much? 7 pounds or something? The way that little one stared up at her, it was like he was already taller than his father.
"You are so beautiful," she said to him.
And then she saw his eyes. The pupils were normal. The irises dark blue, not light green. She looked over at her husband.
"He's perfect."
"I know. They told me he looks like me."
"He does."
"Except for the eyes. But I would have loved him anyway."
"Me too."
She cooed and fussed with the red fabric that the foreman's Shellen had made by hand, until she became aware that something wasn't right. Her husband was way too reserved for this special moment.
"Wrath, what aren't you telling me?"
When he rubbed his face, that terror she'd felt came back.
"What? Is there anything wrong with him?"
"No."
"Where's the butt?"
"They had to take your insides out. You were bleeding too heavily." She frowned and shook her head.
"I'm sorry?"
Wrath patted around until he found her arm. "Your insides are gone." A cold rush hit her.
"A hysterectomy?"
"Yeah, that's what they called it." Beth exhaled. Another thing that hadn't been part of the plan. And it was a shock to realize that part of what defined her as a woman, as a female, was no longer with her. But then she looked down at her perfectly formed, perfectly healthy little boy. The idea that she might not have had this moment, that she wouldn't be here with her husband and her son. Screw the uterus.
"Okay," she said. "That's all right."
"I'm sorry."
"No."
She shook her head sharply. "No, we're not sorry. We have our family, and we're very, very lucky. We are not sorry." And that was when Wrath teared up. The crystal drops falling off his hard jaw onto the tattoos of his inner forearm. As she stared at all the names, she smiled and pictured little Wrath, big and tall, strong as his father.
"We did it," she announced on a sudden rush of optimism. "We did it."
Wrath started to smile, and then he found her mouth, kissing her.
"Yeah, you did. It takes two."
She stroked his face. "You and me, together." "I just got to do the fun part," he said with a grin. A number of hours later, Beth got out of bed and had a sponge bath in the loo. Then she put on a Lan's nightgown and, with Wrath's help, walked out of the room with little Wrath in her arms. To a standing ovation. She'd intended to return to the mansion to find the household, but they had come to her. Nearly 50 of them, from the brothers to the Doggin, were crammed into the training center's concrete hallway, lining it all the way down and back. Hard not to tear up. But then, whatever. They were family. "All hail the king," came the chanting. Cradling her son against her breast and covering LW's ears, she started to laugh.
and that was when she saw her brother. He was beaming, his smile so wide and proud, his hands locked in front of his heart like he was dying to hold the baby. Limping over to him, she didn't say a word. She just passed L.W. over. The joy she got in return as John awkwardly held the red bundle was pretty much the best thing in the world, second only to Rath's. Abruptly, the crowd started chanting in the old language. All hail the king! Well, not really. As Rath said the three words, it was like he'd unplugged the sound to the whole world. Frowning over her shoulder, she and everybody else just stared at the last purebred vampire on the planet. Rath cleared his throat and popped his wraparounds up to rub the bridge of his nose. I abolished the monarchy last night. Cue the crickets.
What?
She said. You told me you didn't want to be the cause of my giving up the throne. You weren't. In the end, it was my choice. Sooner or later, someone else is going to make a run at me. And by extension, you and him. And then if I die, my son's going to end up having to fight to keep something that shouldn't be decided by bloodline. It should be decided by merit. Beth put her hands up to her face.
Oh, my God.
So we're a democracy now. Saxton helped make it legal. And elections are going to take place in a little while. I've talked to Avalon. He's going to coordinate it all. Hell, the guy already had a good slate of candidates. Oh, and the best thing? The Glymera's out of a job. I did away with the council. See ya, motherfuckers. I'm so happy to be retired, Rev cut in. For real. Rath looked in Beth's direction. It's the best thing for us. For L.W., and who knows, maybe he'll decide to run. But it will be his choice. Not a burden, and no one from any segment of any society will be able to tell him that the female he chooses isn't worthy. Ever. At that, Rath shoved his hand in the pocket of the black combat pants he was wearing, and took out a handful of... shavings? No, they were fragments of parchment. As he sprinkled them onto the floor, he said, Oh, and I tore up that fake-ass divorce decree, too. Human ceremony's absolutely legal. But I figure our son has two kinds of blood in him, and I wanted both traditions to count. Beth opened her mouth to say something. In the end, though, all she could do was step in against her husband's hard body and hold on. Naturally, there wasn't a dry eye in the training center. But that was what happened when an ordinary mortal did something worthy of a superhero. Chapter 76. It was a good month later when Rath realized what V's vision had been all about. The face in the heavens, the future in his hands. L.W. was already on a schedule, sleeping during the day, up all night, which was just perfect. Beth had bounced back from the C-section like a rocket, feeding well, eating well, and being the best damn mother on the planet. Talk about your total natural. She was incredible. And so happy. So damned happy. The reality of having a son was better even than the dream had been. And, oh yeah, L.W. was taking to the on-the-planet stuff like a total trooper. Eating, pooping, sleeping, pooping, eating. He rarely fussed or cried, and had no problem being passed around at meals so each member of the household got a chance to hold him. Even the dog and the cat liked him. The kid slept in a crib in the first family suite, and apparently George and Boo both thought of it as a guard station. When the retriever wasn't helping Rath get around, he was right with the kid, lying in front of the damn thing, on guard 24/7. And when George was on duty with his other master, that feline was on shift as the baby slept.
So, yep, it was on a blissfully normal night in June that Beth said she was going for a run after first meal, and Rath decided to take L.W. and his dog and the cat on a promenade around the first floor. The kid always seemed to like that, and as usual, the minute they started walking, his head began to crane around as if he were checking out the real estate. They were in the library, going by the French doors, when L.W. let out a squawk and strained as if something had caught his eye. "What is it, big man?" Rath repositioned his son. God, he loved that word, son, and then did the math. "Is that the moon you're looking at?" "Must be. Yeah, I think it is." Unlatching the door, he opened the way out and took a deep breath. Summer was coming big time, the night warm as bathwater. And as L.W. stretched his arms up, Dad's thought, yep, he was checking out the old man in the sky. Or the face. With a feeling that reality was coalescing in some specific, magical way, Rath turned his son upright and faced him outward, lifting him high, holding the future in his hands. As his son saw the moon for the very first time, with eyes that were as perfect as the rest of him, "I'm going to give you everything I can," Rath said gruffly, glad no one else was around. "Anything you need, I shall provide. And I'm going to love you until my last dying breath." All at once, he realized he was not alone. People were streaming out of the doors of the house. A great crowd. Pivoting around, he held his son protectively, bracing himself for bad news. "What?" They came for Beth when she was on the treadmill. All of them. The whole membership of the Brotherhood. But it wasn't Tor who did the talking. It was Saxton. And when he finished, she went numb and nearly fell out of her Nikes. Her trip back through the tunnel, heading for the house, had the same kind of dreamscape removal that she'd suffered when she'd gotten into trouble giving birth. She didn't remember anything about the rush. Not all the people with her. Not anything that was said. And when she came up to the foyer and saw the others in the household gathered once again, every single one of them had the same expression she felt on her own face. Destiny had taken the reins again, and all they could do was go in the new direction. She was leading the charge as they went around the first floor of the house, expecting at each turn to see Rath and L.W. The open door out onto the terrace provided the clue as to where they were. As she stepped out into the night, she saw her husband holding her son up to the fullest moon of the season, the brilliant shining orb like the sun, the landscape bathed in white light. It was as if he were making a sacred offering. With a quick shift, Rath turned on a dime, shielding their son with his massive arms. "What?" Even though Saxton had brought the information home, everyone looked at her. Stepping forward, she wished she was in something other than workout gear. A ball gown, maybe. "Beth, what the fuck is going on?" She tried to get the words right, frantically stringing nouns and verbs together at random in her head. In the end, though, she kept it short and sweet. Dropping down on one knee, she lowered her head. "Long live the king." On a oneer, the crowd behind her did the same, a chorus of those four words rising up into the night as their bodies lowered to the flagstone. "I'm sorry." Rath shook his head. "I'm not hearing that." She got up, but she was the only one. "You were unanimously elected for life, king of the race. Abalone led the effort, and all those commoners you helped cast the votes. Every single one of them. You have been chosen by your people to lead. You are the king." As the chanting started, Rath seemed to have no idea how to respond.
and it was such a joyful chanting. Female and male voices lifting up to the night sky, a celebration of the present and the future. "And who knows," Beth said as she looked at their son, "maybe if he grows up to be like his father, he'll be chosen too. But it's up to the people. You put the right to vote in their hands, and they gave the throne to you." Rath cleared his throat. Again and again. In the end, all he could do was whisper, "I wish my father and mother were alive to see this." Beth wrapped her arms around her husband and son, holding them both, and as she looked over her man's shoulder and saw the face of the moon, she had a sudden sense that the realigning was over. The new era had finally arrived. "I think they are," she said softly. "I think both of them are looking down right this moment, and they are very, very happy about it." Parents, after all, were especially proud to see courage in their children rewarded by the world, and to know that love abounded around them, everywhere, forevermore.
We hope that you've enjoyed this production of The King by J.R. Ward. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced by Claudia Howard. The King is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, LLC, a Penguin Random House company, and Recorded Books, LLC. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved. The book The King is available wherever NAL books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.